Echo Hotel. 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 Echo.
That you could make me cry. I only know it's long ago. You said I love you too, but I got one solution left. We're gonna start anew.
How do you do? I thought, why not? Na 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 na, just me and you, and then we can na 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 na, just like before. And you will say, na 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 na, please give me more. And you will think, na 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 na, hey, that's what I'm living for.
How do you do? I thought why not, na 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 na, just me and you. And then we can, na 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 na, just like before. And you will say, na 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 na, please give me more.
Just me and you, and then we can na 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 na, just like before. And you will say na 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 na, please give me more. And you will think na 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 na, hey, that's what I'm living for.
How do you do? I thought why not, na 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 na, just me and you, and then we can. Just like before, and you will say, na 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 na, please give me more, and you will think, na 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 na, hey, that's what I'm living for.
How do you do? I thought, na 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 na,
just me and you, and then we can, na 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 na. Please give me more, and you will think, na 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 na, hey, that's what I'm living for. I do, you do, na 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 na.
Oh, Welcome to the Insomnia Stream. How we do business edition. How we do business edition. We're about to find out exactly how we do business. And I guess how we don't do business. How things don't get done. Kind of like last stream. Last stream, if you missed it, I highly recommend it. Not just because I made it, but because I think it's very relevant. Extremely relevant when it comes to understanding our situation today and how it really hasn't changed in at least the last 50 years in respects to white replacement. Now, we haven't really moved the needle in any kind of direction other than the direction leading to our, well, ultimate demise. And how a lot of the reason for that is this inability for people on the right, white people on the right, to be confrontational, or they get this idea that somehow they're using this 5D chess strategy by not actually pointing out the problem. By not actually being honest about the issue, because either they are afraid of being called a racist, they're afraid of maybe the, in some instances, very real consequences of being called a racist, or worse yet, because they think there's some kind of strategy. Now, basically, the Q-tard version of this would be saving Israel for last. We have to ignore the opposite, or the obvious, rather, and just sort of pretend that once we get to, see, we'll try to get to step three. From step one, we're going to step three, but we have to not do step two. We have to not do step two, even though step two is necessary to get to step three. We're going to try to accomplish step three without accomplishing step two. Now, let me explain a little bit what I mean by this. By let's go over a debate from 1995, in fact. 1995, in the United States, there was a debate brewing about possibly putting a hold on immigration, possibly rolling back immigration. You know, it's the debate that never ends in this country. Because white people can't be honest about it. Never ends in this country. And let's see the kinds of arguments that were used in 1995, because clearly they weren't effective. Clearly they weren't effective at all, because the situation's much worse here in 2025 than it was in 1995. Man, it sounds like I'm pissing myself. Well, there's my shower head just all of a sudden started leaking water. I don't know if you guys could hear that. I was like, what the fuck is that? I think it's done. That was interesting. Okay. Well, this place is always, I think it's haunted. This place is haunted. Is it done? Okay. It's done. I was like, what is that noise? Anyway, we're going to go back. We go back to the 90s now, and we're taking a look at this debate where, of course, unfortunately, you have people trying to use strategies to avoid being called racist and kind of beating around the bush, the elephant in the room that actually, yes, it is about race. Actually, yes. The reason why the immigrants of today and in 1995, they are worse than the immigrants of 1850 or 1895, unless we're talking about the Jewish immigrants, but that's a whole other thing, is because the immigrants after the Immigration Act of 1965, which they love to talk about even in this this debate here, made it so that the immigration was coming from non-white countries. And yes, that matters. And yes, that is why immigrants from Europe were more easily assimilated, another magic word they like to throw around. Because they were white. And they couldn't just say that. So they had to come up, not only did they have to come up with all these fucking reasons, other than race, that aren't nearly as true often or compelling, even if they were, like in economic reasons, as an example. And because they were only using these reasons to kind of distract from the real reason, which is race, and their opponents knew this, the audience is left with a spectacle of bad liars being browbeaten by Jews. When you watch this debate, what you're going to see is people who are bad at lying about why they don't want immigration being browbeaten by a pack of Jews who are delighted that they won't just say it. They won't just say it because the audience knows. The Jews know. Everyone knows why they don't want brown and black immigrants. And because they won't say it, they look dishonest, they look weaselly. And they've lost before they've even started because they're lying. Now look, some of these people that are going to be in this debate on our side are still active and have done, I would say, some good. And I'm not judging them as, their full contribution to the fight against white replacement. For example, notably, you will see that Peter Brimlow is on this panel. He's the founder of VDare that went belly up last year as a result of Lawfare from the state of New York. You'll see Dan Stein of FAIR, which is the Federation for American Immigration Reform, again, who may or may not have done some good work back in, say, the 90s or so. And so I'm not judging them as people necessarily, but I am going to judge them based on this performance, this moment in time. And I am also going to mention that if you look up these people, along with the other panelists, which one of them might surprise you, on the side of wanting to close immigration. Well, I don't want to get ahead of him. I'll go over it in a second. Let's first, before we get into that, before we go over who's all in this thing, let's take a look at who funded this spectacle. We talk a lot about how why isn't there like a millionaire or a billionaire, or you know, which would be better, funding some of this pro-white stuff. And to the extent that there are billionaires, like, why does the money seem to go to ineffectual methods? In fact, you could say to some degree these organizations that these men have been the heads of and have worked at over for decades, and apparently not a whole lot to show for it results wise. I mean, just let's just be honest, right? Is immigration worse or better since the founding of VDare or FAIR? I'm just, let's just be honest, right? So the first donation that's listed in this presentation is the John M. Olin Foundation. I looked into that. Basically, John M. Olin was like this military-industrial complex guy who basically got rich making ammunition. Now, among other things, but that he was like this industrialist billionaire. The foundation no longer exists. The way it was structured was he wanted it to be all spent out and spent down and wound down instead of perpetuating forever. So I think in 2006, they were out of money. And so, you know, that was that. But this is, that's him. That's John M. Olin, who was a billionaire that had tons of money to throw at this sort of thing. And you could probably, I mean, look, it's all different these days, right? The definitions even of right and left seem to to shift dramatically at times, but you would, I guess, consider him right-wing to some extent. Next up, you had the Annenberg Foundation. The Annenberg Foundation was the foundation of Walter Annenberg, and before you ask, yes, he's Jewish. He was a Jewish billionaire that worked in the Nixon administration, also published, I believe, the TV Guide and some other magazines back in the like 70s and 80s, but, you know, had billions of dollars. He went a different way with his foundation, even though he was, you know, some might say to some degree, controlled opposition right wing, you know, that type, the right wing Jew. I mean, how right wing is a Jew ever, right? At least on the surface, you know, he was funding conservative causes, we'll say, right? Well, now that he's dead and his family has taken over, all that money from the foundation is now going to trans rights and social justice and all that fun stuff. Next up, we had the Laurel Foundation. I couldn't find anything about this. There is a Laurel Foundation, but it's literally, speaking of trans rights, it's for trans kids and kids with AIDS. I don't think it's the same Laurel Foundation, but I couldn't find what this Laurel Foundation was, so I don't know who these people were. The debate is hosted by Michael Kinsley, who is a left-wing Jew. And so he's, you're again, this is something that's, I don't think I've ever seen a debate of this sort that's been moderated by a right-wing person ever. So of course, just agreeing to these terms already to, I don't know, to try to show that you can hang out with the fancy Jews. I don't know if that's, you know, what, why would you even agree to this? Because not only is the moderator a lefty Jew, Michael Kinsley, it's at Bard College, a lefty liberal arts college with a Jewish president who's on the other side of the debate panel. So, you know, you have that. And the production itself, the producer-director is another liberal Jew, Warren Stiebel. So you're basically in enemy territory from the very beginning. There's a lot of things that are going to be wrong with the optics. So, for example, the people arguing in favor of limiting immigration. You know, you got William F. Buckley Jr. Of course, it's the 90s. He's not as popular then, but like at that point, he's kind of like considered conservative intelligentsia. You know, he's William F. Buckley Jr. He's a very... very well respected and sounds very waspy in his delivery and whatnot. We've talked about him in previous streams. For example, the Shockley edition, where he invited Dr. Shockley, the inventor of the transistor, on to essentially make fun of his views on race and IQ. So already, William Buckley is certainly not a race realist, or at least has made attempts to, at the very least, muddy the waters when it comes to race realism, but also, notably, has no problem with Jews whatsoever. That's going to be a common thread with the people arguing on the side of limiting immigration. They're not going to touch the Jewish question with a 10-foot pole, and in fact, they'll often do quite the opposite. So then you also have Arianna Huffington. Well, that's a joke just to start. Yes, that is Arianna Huffington of the Huffington Post. Many of you might not know this, but Arianna Huffington at one point was considered a Republican, was considered a conservative, and then like her husband died or I don't know what the fuck happened, and then she turned into like a total lefty. But look, just from a optics point of view, she's Greek. She has a very noticeable Greek accent. And so here you have a panel of people arguing against immigration, legal or illegal, and two of them have foreign accents. Arianna Huffington, which her accent is basically comical, it's so thick, and she'd only been in the country, I mean, I think she arrived in the United States in the late 1960s, and then you had Peter Brimlow, who has a British accent, but foreign nonetheless. And so, and he obviously is also an immigrant himself. So it doesn't matter. Look, it doesn't matter that intellectually you can square this, right? Like you can say, oh, well, in the context of this debate, that's not really that relevant. Optically, it looks really bad that half of your panel arguing against the immigration are literally immigrants. Then you have Dan Stein, who I mentioned is I think he's still a president of FAIR. But this is the thing that they always shy away from these individuals shy away from the Jewish question, whether you're talking about Peter Brimlow, Dan Stein, Arianne Huffington, certainly William F. Buckley Jr. But even when it comes to accusations of racism of any kind, you get this cowering away from the accusation. In the case of FAIR, I was looking into, because I felt like for an organization which, according to the data I found, has a operating budget of $11 million fucking dollars a year, I kind of thought that I would have heard of them by now, or at least seen their work. I thought when I went to their Twitter profile that their tweets would have more than like 5 retweets. I thought that when I went to their YouTube channel, their YouTube videos would have more than 200 views. I just thought, like if you're spending $11 million fucking dollars a year, I would have known who you were or known of your work in some way. I just thought, and maybe I'm the idiot. Maybe I'm the idiot, right? Because I've never heard of you. I'm sure I've heard of it, but I can't think of like, oh yeah, oh, have you seen that great thing that FAIR came out with? No, that's never happened in my life. Now, FAIR, it doesn't matter if they act like they're not racist. It doesn't matter if they act like Jews are white. They're still labeled as, from the Southern Poverty Law Center as an example, as a hate group, as a white supremacist group, just like, the other people. Maybe not Arianne Huffington anymore. FAIR before Dan Stein, this is from Wikipedia, just because, again, I didn't know who the fuck they are. I had to read up a little bit on these guys. Apparently, they had a scandal involving their previous, I don't know if he was the president or just an associate. His name was John Tanton. Anyway, this is just something, the blurb from there. Let's see here. FAIR had become the most important organization in the United States, fueling the backlash against immigration. Well, really, that's interesting. Again, I've never heard of him. And Tanton was perceived as the leader. As a result, liberal groups who opposed FAIR focused on Tanton, who was at the time in his 32nd year on the board. So I guess he was just a board member. Tanton was concerned that the U.S. birth rates had dropped below replacement levels. So he actually sounds like he's kind of based. He kind of gets it. In 1986, Tanton wrote memos to FAIR colleagues, which became known as the Whiten Memos, predicting a Latin onslaught, accurately predicting, I guess, and worried that high Latino birth rates and low U.S. birth rates would lead to, quote, the present majority to hand over its political power to a group that is simply more fertile. Again, predicted, it sounds like. He was concerned that Latinos would, quote, bring with them the tradition of the mordida, the bribe, the lack of involvement in public affairs. He asked, what are the differences in the educatability between Hispanics and Asiatics, with their excellent school records and long tradition of scholarship? The memos, which became known as the Whiten Memos, were leaked to the press in 1988. He warned that unless Latino immigration was restricted, it would ultimately lead to a linguistic, economic, racial, and religious apartheid in the United States. Again, a lot of that sort of has come true. I've come to the point of view that for European American society and culture to persist requires a European American majority, and a clear one at that. Well, because this memo got leaked where he's just, again, this is what I'm saying. The people on this panel, they might believe as you and I do. They might believe that immigration is an issue because of racial reasons, privately. But it doesn't help if they're afraid to say it. In the case of the former president or board member, I guess, of FAIR, these memos got leaked and he was forced to, well, he wasn't forced. No one's forced, right, to apologize. But he apologized. He apologized and then denied that he said it, which, come on, he probably did. But because he didn't want to be called a racist, that's, you know, he had this, and he was just admitting that race realism is a major factor in why we need to oppose immigration. And look, I think it's impossible to imagine that, you know, maybe with the exception of Arianna Huffington, that the other, and maybe William F. Buckley, who seems to be more of like one of these Thomas Sowell retards, or at least on the surface, where he thinks that, like, you know, content of character and all this fucking nonsense. I kind of get the idea that Peter Brimlow and Dan Stein are, you know, privately pro-white, and that's what's driving them. But they can't say that. They can't say that. And so what happens is they get toyed with, like a cat toying with a dead mouse, by Ira Glasser. See, this is what's more maddening, okay? These guys can't mention the JQ, even though when they go to argue their arch nemesis, they go to argue the biggest thing, the biggest problem facing America, and they go on the stage to argue this thing against the enemies of America, that's the people that are, they're poisoning the well. And who is it? It's Jews. It's Ira Glasser, Leon Botstein, Ed Koch, and then a spaghetti Jew, Frank Sherry. So it's like, come on, come on. And they can't point this out. And they have several opportunities, believe me, even just in this debate alone. But let's go over these guys, right? So you've got Ira Glasser. Now, Ira Glasser, hey, guess what? Guess what? Surprise, surprise, he's descended from Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe around the turn of the century. Poland, to be specific. He was born in 1938. He was head of the, well, essentially he was the executive director of the ACLU. Okay, so he was the head of the ACLU through, from like 1978 through 2001. So obviously this is the middle of his, in the middle of his tenure. Leon Botstein, who also is a descendant of Jewish immigrants who didn't come here around the turn of the century, but more recently, they came after World War II. His parents were Holocaust survivors. And he became the youngest university president at the university that they're here at, Bard College, at age 28. He became the president of Bard College at age 28. Bard College, who, by the way, received money from Jeffrey Epstein, but, you know, I don't know, well, something. Probably no big deal. But his family came to the United States in 1949, and so he wasn't even born here. He was 3 years old. So he's an immigrant, a Jewish immigrant. And then, of course, Ed Koch, America's mayor, and former New York City mayor. He was, and basically, in terms of likability at the time that he would have been here, I mean, he was like, in a way, he was like a Donald Trump type figure, or, you know, prior to Rudy Giuliani's involvement with Donald Trump, the way Rudy Giuliani used to be loved by America too, before he, you know, decided to work with Trump. And then you have Frank Sherry, who's a Italian Catholic who works for a pro-immigration, or actually the biggest pro-immigration NGO in the United States. I don't have the name handy here, but it doesn't really matter. So these guys are obviously the pro-immigration people versus the anti-immigration people. Now, the way it starts out is you get William F. Buckley doing his opening statement. Let's have a little listen. Let's have a little listen because, again, you kind of got your hands tied. You kind of got your hands tied if you're trying to make the argument that, as the argument is, essentially, that the 1965 Immigration Act has changed America in a bad way. It's changed, you know, this very, you know, it's hard to really kind of define what that means exactly, but it, because if you're not talking about race, right? And so they got their hands tied because they have to make the argument that it's changed America in some kind of bad way. And, but they, it's going to be hard to articulate that without mentioning the racial component. And the opponents are going to seize on that and point out that there is a racial component. And now not only do you look like a racist, you look like a secret racist, which is even worse. At least if you were a racist and open about it, the crowd in 1995 might have been slightly less appalled by the whole thing.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, the subject we're debating tonight begs to be mishandled by the affirmative. Those of us who believe immigration should be curbed and poisoned by the negative, those who urge no changes in immigration policy. The reason this is so is that we have here before the House a question of public policy in which the great intimacies of ethnic pride are involved. If the subject under discussion were whether to lessen the tariff barriers or raise them, we would only marginally touch on human sensitivities. The great shadow that looms menacingly over one side is rank nativism, to stumble into saying, that man who wants to get into the United States is black, brown, or yellow, and we have enough of them.
See, he starts off his argument trying to, already, he's on his back heels. Instead of proactively saying, yeah, we do have enough of them. This is a white country. The reasons why America is a place that non-whites want to come to in the first place is directly tied to the percentage of whites that created this country. No, he has to start off by saying, oh, we have to talk about this issue, but let me assure you that, you know, let's not degrade ourselves. Let's not lower ourselves to this level of calling each other racist. It's not about race. Then why'd you have to fucking say it? Because everyone in the audience obviously already knows it. So already you're losing. You're already on the defense. You're already working within the frame, and the Jews on the table across the table from you are licking their fucking lips. Because there's blood in the fucking water. Because you can't just say it. You can't just say yes. Yes. Actually, there are biological differences between European peoples and other peoples. And those biological differences are important enough to where it ends up manifesting in the kinds of societies that we're able to create and maintain. And when you start to dilute the gene pool, you start to fuck with the demographics with people who don't come from countries that or even regions that have ever been able to create or maintain civilizations or things that we would recognize as great civilizations, and you start fucking pumping them into our countries, it's going to ruin the mix. It's going to ruin the fucking mix. No, no. Instead, you're already making it. You've already taken that. That's your only fucking weapon. And you're taking it out of the game. You're taking it off the table. To avoid being called a racist, to avoid some kind of confrontation. You know what? Every one of these guys, every one of these intellectuals, they are in a financial position where they could be fucking, you know, dragged to the press and called racist all day long. William F. Buckley Jr. is not going to be dying in some kind of homeless shelter.
On the other side, the allurements are a composite. There are the libertarians who say anybody who wants to do anything should be permitted to do so. And if one of the things people want to do is come to live in the United States, why not? That is one of the great disabling rhetorical limbs that get in the way of clear thought. Another holds that inasmuch as everyone in America is the child or great-grandchild of an immigrant, what reason can there be for adopting different policies from those that let us or our forebears in?
See, again, he does point out that, hey, libertarians think that we should just let everyone in. If you want to come in, come in. And then he addresses the argument that a lot of people are either the child or grandchild of an immigrant. Well, that's not even really true. I'm certainly not the the child or grandchild of an immigrant. We go back all the way to the 16 fucking hundreds, buddy. And I'm sorry your family showed up later. I don't even think his did, though. I think his has been here a while. I don't know. I have to look up his family tree. But he has to head that off, too, because of the bad optics of two of the members of his panel or on his side. He's got to be like, well, you're gonna make fun of that. But, you know, it's like, well, then maybe you shouldn't have had those guys on. If that, because you've taken the race, because you don't have to worry about that. If the question's about race, you don't have to worry about the fact that Arianna Huffington sounds like a fucking cartoon character and that Peter Brimlow sounds like an English professor because they're white. And if the argument is white immigrants good, non-white bad, they don't have that. They can't use that weapon against you. It doesn't fucking matter. You can have someone that barely speaks English, that gets German. And if your argument is race-based, it doesn't matter. But you've decided to, like, lie about the actual problem, and now you're fucked.
There will be data given on these points as they arise. For instance, it is simply not the case that immigration on the scale in which it now proceeds is conventional in American history. And it isn't the case that the ebb and flow of human beings into, or for that matter, out of one country into another, are mechanical questions to be governed simply by the laws of arbitrage. These particulars my colleagues will confront as required in the discussion.
So again, just talking about the sheer numbers, which is it's a poor argument anyway. As you'll see, it's not effective. It doesn't sell. People don't care about fucking numbers. They don't care about fucking numbers. Numbers, most people hear us, you hear a statistic and it's like, so what? Yeah, you know, as I said a million times, you know, you have people thinking that, you know, facts don't care about your feelings, like Ben Shapiro would say, when the reality is feelings don't care about your facts.
I mean to touch on the touchiest of all questions in the hope, probably fruitless, that polemical opportunism will be restrained. I think it is a legitimate concern of a country, ours especially. We have been taking in year after year 50% of all immigrants in the entire world to give thought to the culture and ethos we hope to preserve. What this comes down to is a question of assimilation. The ideal of immigration is not alone to provide shelter or even economic opportunity, but to create another American. Now, to say any such thing these days in the firestorm of multiculturalism is to court criticism that can be mortal, especially in academic salons. But recall that it was not so long ago taken for granted that anyone coming to America would need to learn something about American institutions and would need, if he hoped to vote, to read and write in English. That isn't the case anymore. In New York City schools, we learn courses are taught in 100 languages, and there's a shortage of teachers who can speak Albanian.
See, and there you go. You've got the proxy. You got the proxy. He can't talk about race, so what does he talk about? He talks about race in a manner of speaking by talking about language. He says that they're not assimilating. Well, guess what, buddy? You can make an argument that they're not assimilating, and whoever is going to oppose you can tell you how maybe they are assimilating. Maybe it'll take a little bit longer to assimilate. As you'll hear later on in this debate, they'll mention, well, Germans, when they first came to America, they didn't speak English, and now, you know, two generations later, the German... You know, the grandchildren of the German immigrants, they speak English. So what are you worried about? If that's all you're worried about is some kind of language barrier, then you're just being a little nervous Nancy over there. It's going to work itself out. But at no time will these non-English speaking, you know, East Indians, as an example, magically turn white three generations later. See, if you make it about what it's really about, when you make it about race... instead of assimilation, because no amount of assimilation will ever turn them white. No amount of assimilation of Haitian immigrants is ever going to make them white. But they were either too embarrassed to say this, or they thought they were being clever by using these proxies like language. Trying to use words like assimilation. Because now all your opponent has to do is point out the exception. Well, you say they're not assimilating, but what about Pablo over there? He's got his own business. He speaks English, and he's successful. He's an entrepreneur. He's an embodiment of the American spirit. He's a model immigrant. See, if your argument was racial, you could say, yeah, but he's not white, is he? It's like you show up on the battlefield and instantly take all the ammunition out of your guns and then charge the enemy.
The questions that were brought on, the pressures that were brought on immigrants, so to speak, pressures to Americanize them, were so direct that during the last half of the 19th century, one-third of immigrants simply gave up and after a while traveled back home. Immigrants were required just to begin with to make their own way economically. That is no longer true under the welfare state, and were required to learn the language of American English, no longer required. Those were the most conspicuous forces of socialization, but there were others designed to communicate an ethos.
There you go again. Acting as if the reason why they're not assimilating post-1965 isn't because of some kind of racial differences between the immigrants that were coming here in 1965 and 1865, but rather these other pressures that sure might have contributed a little bit, like he mentions the welfare state, right? So he says that if you came here in 1865 and then you had trouble making it, you would go back to your country of origin because there weren't all these safety nets and all this welfare state stuff set up to provide for you if you were to fail. And you could say that you can look at Europe, right? And that is obviously true, that these immigrants that come to Europe are staying there regardless of their ability to quote-unquote assimilate, which they can never do, but regardless of their ability to succeed even economically in these countries, because they're parasitically sucking off the natives. And yeah, that is a change. That is something that's making immigration go into hyperdrive. That is speeding things up, that is deteriorating the fabric of the society at an alarming rate. But that's not ultimately the problem. That's just an accelerant. That's not the fire. That's the gasoline being poured on the fire. The fire is they're not us. And they never will be.
One of them, of course, was the discipline of self-government. Self-government is very rare, and in the 19th century, something of an eccentricity. And then to the ethos in America, presumed religious convictions. 98% of America at the time of the Revolutionary War was Protestant.
Yes, they were also white. You have no problem pointing out their religion. And you act as if their religion had more to do with their behavior, or as you say, their ability to even fathom self-government, this thing that was a novelty in the world. Where did this novelty come from? Did it come out of Asia? Did it come out of Africa? Or was it the product of European biology?
It is our contention that America, the most successful engine of assimilation in the history of the world, hasn't got the steam needed to handle immigration at the current level, and that the burden of assimilation became more acute when in 1965 the qualifications for immigration changed so radically. Does this mean that it is more difficult to assimilate Haitians and Mexicans than British and Italians? Yes. We're prepared to go that far, wistfully hoping that this is not to earn a denunciation as racists.
See, again, he recognizes that Haitians are harder to assimilate, but then immediately follows with, but not because we're racist. Well, then what is it? What is it exactly? What is it about this magical ethos that Europeans were so quick to take up that the Haitians just seem to struggle with? What's the problem then? Clearly, your argument is racist. And that's okay. Strip away the pejorative nature of that term. It's totally fine to be a racist. It's actually okay. It's not just okay. It's good. It's good for a white people in a white country to remain that way. To not view their people as just interchangeable with anyone. Imagine a family. Imagine a family quick to discard their children because it was like they found out, there's these kids over here. There's these kids over here that they're better at math. So I'm going to throw little Jimmy in the fucking dumpster and bring in this other kid. The moment your nation stops operating like a family with those kinds of family ties and bonds, a nation's meaningless. At that point, you become an economic zone. At that point, there is no argument that can be made against immigration. Because you're just running a business. You're not running a country. And unfortunately, that's how conservatives and the right in America have viewed America for, several decades.
We really should be permitted to speak about such matters without risking the charge of un-Americanism. Why should Pennsylvania, founded by the English, become a colony of aliens who will shortly be so numerous as to Germanize us instead of our anglifying them? The person who spoke those words was Benjamin Franklin. And, Mr. Chairman, we will bear bravely any charge leveled against us that could also be leveled against Benjamin Franklin. He thought it entirely civilized to speak about the ethnic characteristics of other countries. We do believe that there is something there when we speak of American exceptionalism. This doesn't bind us to disdain the cultural claims of others. We listen with respect to someone asserting the relative achievements of the Swiss or the Spanish or the Swedes, though we might get restless listening to the claims of some nationalists best quarantined in the United Nations. We no need here tonight to document American exceptionalism. We need only to document that more is being expected of this country than it can reasonably be expected to furnish, while still surviving as the country to whose health and prosperity we are committed. Ladies and gentlemen, let's drink to that.
So that is the opening statement again, trying to deflect by saying, look, even Benjamin Franklin had concerns about the ethnic identity of some of the immigrants. He uses an example of Germans going to Pennsylvania and saying that, oh, look, even Benjamin Franklin had an issue with the Germans Germanicizing the Anglos in Pennsylvania instead of the other way around. See, but the Germans, they eventually assimilated. Pennsylvania is not a state that speaks German. So it's a stupid argument, because you're basically saying that you're worried about nothing, that Benjamin Franklin was worried about nothing. Because clearly it worked itself out. So I can just say, well, you're being an alarmist, as was Benjamin Franklin. Here he was, freaking out about the Germans in Pennsylvania, just like you're freaking out about the Cubans in Florida. Or the Mexicans in Southern California. Or the Haitians everywhere. Or the Indians everywhere. When clearly it worked itself out, didn't it? Everything turned out okay. So, obviously, to refute this, we now have Leon Botstein. Leon Botstein. Like I said, he's the president of the college that they're speaking at. So they're in enemy territory with an enemy director, with an enemy moderator. It's just like, I don't know. Let's see what Botstein has to say.
Today's debate is an experience in déjà vu. We've heard the same refrains before. Too many bad, different, new immigrants, as opposed to fewer good, old-style immigrants.
Well, that didn't take long. With his opening line, he basically points out the obvious. You guys are being a little vague about this. You don't like these new immigrants. You don't like these people. What do you mean by these people? You like the old immigrants, but not the new immigrants? What do you mean by that? And because you can't just fucking say it, now you look like a weaselly weasel.
That we can't afford immigration altogether. Is this any different from the predictions of doom expressed by, yes, Ben Franklin, about Germans in Pennsylvania? Republicans in 1896 who wanted a literacy test. Henry Cabot Lodge's derision of Italians as worse than the Irish. And the misguided Immigration Commission of 1911, when immigration reached an all-time high, which predicted that new immigrants would either compete for jobs or ruin the fabric of America.
Well, hindsight's 20/20 there, buddy. And again, this guy was not born in America. He's a Jewish immigrant who came here at the age 3, and by 25 years later was running this college. I'm sure that was all based on merit. I'm sure that was some of that merit-based shit we're always hearing about, huh?
They were wrong. So why are today's naysayers with the same arguments suddenly right?
Exactly. And that's the problem. Without the racial component to your argument, you've got nothing, because it is a racial problem. And you sound like a liar when you can't just say it. And there, it's going to be easy for the high verbal IQ Jews to make you look fucking stupid. And make you squirm. And make you uncomfortable. And it doesn't even matter what you're saying. It doesn't matter if everything you say is true, if all the statistics that you pull out of your ass are good, and if all of the arguments you're making, economic and otherwise, are also real arguments to be made, and maybe even like the secondary factors of why this immigration stuff's bad, you still look like you're lying. And the audience is going to pick up on that. And what's a debate for if it's not? I mean, look, you're not going to persuade the people you're debating against. It's never about that, right? It's to persuade the people in the audience. At least I presume that's why you would go on national television and subject yourself to this. Because you hope that the people at home watching this debate are going to be swayed one way or the other. So it's about persuasion. And if you look like you're lying, it's not very persuasive.
Immigration in our past had been more statistically significant than it is now. Almost 15% of the population in 1910 was foreign born. Today, only 8% is. Since the first census in 1790, the percent of immigrants has been unusually high, and America flourished economically and culturally.
See what he's able to do? Because you can't bring up race. If you had opened with race, none of this would make any sense. He'd be backing you up. He would be saying, yeah, look, we had all this immigration back when it was all white people and it wasn't a problem. In fact, here's the numbers. Speaking of useless graphs that don't sell, they don't convince anyone. But just for visualization here, here's what he's talking about. Here's the argument you take away from him. This is the percentage of immigrants who are white. And up until just around World War II, it was really close to 100%. And then it takes a nosedive to almost zero. Well, not to almost zero. It's a little deceptive, this graph. Where it looks like zero, if you can't see it on the screen, that's really like 70% or whatever. It's lower now, but that's the data, that's the graph I could find.
And there are only a million immigrants coming in a year, not two.
So again, you try to make it about numbers. Statistics don't really sell people. The number of illegal immigrants is never changed officially. Like, they lie about it. No one really knows. I mean, if you wanted to be like super generous, you could say, well, they're illegal. How are we going to know? There'd be ways of estimating. At the time that this aired, there was already this is according to Pew Research, at least. I don't know how accurate it was. But according to Pew Research, they're saying there's only 5.7 illegal immigrants in 1995 at the time that this aired. My guess is it was much higher than that. But again, it's just numbers. Numbers aren't compelling to anyone. No one even knows what that means. Once you start talking about millions of this and millions of that and hundreds of thousands of this, it's just fucking numbers.
Today's immigrants won't behave any differently from our forefathers and foremothers.
See, because you can't talk about what's the big difference between today's immigrants and our forefathers. And by the way, our forefathers, bitch, you just showed up. You just fucking showed up. Our forefathers, get the fuck out of here. It's not our forefathers. You weren't even born here. See, this is another reason why you can't be silent about Jews and the role that they have played. Because they come here and they start talking about our forefathers. This motherfucker is just as much related to George Washington as I'm related to the fucking Shah of Iran. Actually, probably even less. This motherfucker. And they do that. And it's not just him. Every Jew on this panel. They'll come up and they'll start talking about our forefathers this and our founding fathers that. When we know for a fact, this guy hasn't even been here one generation. And the other two, they've only been here literally one generation. They're not connected to these fucking people, which is exactly why there's a problem with immigration. Because they're not connected to the founding fathers. They're not connected to the our forefathers. They have no problem blowing the whole fucking thing up. And because the people arguing in favor of us, I guess our representatives at this table, are too afraid to point this shit out, it just goes unsaid. It goes unmentioned. Everyone just accepts, for whatever reason, that it's totally legitimate for a Jew who moved here when he was three to talk about our forefathers and what they meant. It's perfectly legitimate to have these Jewish immigrants, many of whose family came here around the turn of the century or after World War II. It's totally legitimate to have these Jews, not just at our educational institutions, but as federal judges interpreting what our forefathers meant. You see, when you can't talk about Jews and you can't talk about race, you can't talk about when they're demonstrating the problem right in front of you, you're useless. You're fucking useless. But you really wanted to get invited to those fucking dinner parties.
A century ago, there were public and private schools in the rural Midwest teaching only German. Yet by the second and third generation, English triumphed.
See again? Because they were white. because they were white. Every one of their arguments goes in the fucking trash if you can just say the real reason. Every single one of them. There's not a single one of their arguments that makes any sense if you start talking about race.
Second-generation Spanish speakers in Florida are showing the same pattern. Loss of ancestral language toward proficiency in English.
Oh, yeah. All the Spanish, the model citizens in Florida.
Even intermarriage rates show their classic upward trend.
Again, this is an argument against immigration if you talk about race. Intermarriage is no longer a benefit. That's a bad thing you can use against this. See, again, if you're just honest, if you're not lying, you can say, yeah, actually, that's horrible. Thanks for bringing that up, buddy. Thanks for bringing up the dilution of our gene pool. See, everything that he lists is basically a negative if you can talk about race.
All previous generations of immigrants and their children had high rates of school dropout, illness, poverty, and crime. We were warned that the masses of foreigners on the Lower East Side would never enter the mainstream and would corrupt American mores. And yet the transition to the middle class took place. So too today. Just look at the Korean grocery markets in New York.
Interesting how he has to use race too. Oh no, it's fine. Lots of immigrants are successful when they come to America, just like Korean grocery store owners. Well, that's odd. Why are the Koreans specifically more? I mean, notice how you didn't talk about the African grocery store owners. Yeah, you know, the Africans that have been here 400 years, they still haven't assimilated somehow. You had to specify Korean. And again, this would perfect example of if you were able to talk about race, you could say, well, I'm glad you brought up the Koreans. As it happens, Koreans are higher IQ. That's why they're more successful in the business world than these other immigrants. Doesn't mean we want them. But you're demonstrating this is a perfect example of the realities of race.
Do our opponents really believe that our global economy, with its ease and speed of travel, that we can stop immigration? We get 19 million visitors a year. Even Britain, a more homogeneous and traditional island culture, has an immigration problem. Sealing the borders is a pipe dream.
Oh, it's just too hard. It's like the libertarian argument. The libertarian argument that it's just too... Oh, we can't ban things. It's too hard. Let's legalize heroin, because people are going to be doing heroin anyway. Why have any laws? Because people are going to do the things you make laws against, so just laws are stupid.
So the question is rather how we can manage immigration better, simplify it, encourage legal rather than illegal immigration. We are not the French and not the Japanese. Our culture, like our language, is the evolving consequence of sustained immigration.
Because you took race out of the equation. You took race out of the equation, so now he's able to neuter you. He's able to head off and say, you can't use Japan as an example because the Japanese are an ethnicity. The Japanese are a race. And you keep telling us it's not about race, that Americans have they are part of the melting pot. They are this multicultural example in the world. You know, you people on the right, you're the ones that keep saying it's your objections to this are not about race. It's about assimilation. Assimilating to this, you know, nebulous thing called Americanism that anyone can do, and there's no connection to race to it whatsoever. And so that's what he's saying. He's saying we're not the Japanese. We're America. Anyone can become an America. It's just a set of ideas.
Our opponents, proud conservatives, seem to favor free trade and markets without regulation for everything but people. Why should we not be able to hire the best engineer from anywhere, just as we're free to buy the best TV set, even if it's foreign? Look how much American science industry and our universities profited from the intellectual migration of the 1930s. The poor from over the Mexican border come because they will work where and when others won't. Sure, immigrants cost money, but they also fill jobs, and they fuel the economy. The Zoe Baird problem is a matter of demand.
And ironically, the pro-immigration Republicans of today have adopted exactly what he's saying. Because if you can't use race in your argument, What he's saying is the logical conclusion of free market capitalism. As he look, when you take race, when you take the real reason why there's a problem out of the argument, I mean, not to sound repetitive, but like I feel like I have to bang this into some people's heads. The logical conclusion is, look, if you're going to be this free market capitalist, this libertarian type that believes in the free market and the free market of ideas and all this other stuff, then yeah, what is the difference between someone from Mexico or someone from Africa? Or, you know, what does it matter? At that point, it really is just a matter of dollars and cents. So if you're going to tell me as a Republican that it's just as patriotic, as an example, to buy a television that was manufactured in Taiwan as it is to buy a television that was manufactured in the Rust Belt somewhere, I mean, then what's, you know, what's the difference? I mean, if it's all just market, free market pressures, price, supply and demand, if that's the world we're living in, what does it matter where they come from? If they're willing to do the same job at a lower price, then clearly that's what the market is signaling. Those are the people that we should bring into the country. If there's nothing else that we can look at as a variable in this equation, well, I don't know, like race. And unfortunately, like I said, there's the boomer conservatives of today agree with this guy now. Because you have to. This is what happens when you can't be honest.
We should encourage skilled immigration, regulate unskilled immigration according to demand, and preserve America as a refuge from political and religious persecution. Immigration will remain the unique factor behind America's greatness as a competitive and different nation, not characterized by a rigid, jingoist, and racist view of itself.
See? America, it's just a set of ideas. It's a refuge for political dissidents around the world, apparently. And obviously we know who he's talking about. It's a safe zone for persecuted peoples. We know who he's talking about, and he'll get more specific about that, make no mistake. The man who his entire identity is that he is the son of Holocaust survivors who were almost exterminated by pro-white nationalists. Who had to come to America in order to live, to survive. That's his entire identity. He's allowed to say it. He doesn't, and he doesn't beat around the bush. He's very explicit about this, you know, as the debate goes on. So next up, you've got Peter Brimlow. Now, the problem with this is, again, apparently, one of his books had recently come out around the time that they did this debate. And so a lot of the rhetoric, it's about his book, Alienation, which I have not read. I have not read. So I don't know if he's explicitly pro-white in this book. I do know that he's talked about the Great Replacement, you know, at least within, you know, the last few years or so. I think that he is probably, if I had to put like a based-o-meter on these people, he's probably like the most based on this panel, okay? But that said, I'm not going to judge these people on the body of their work prior or after this event. I am judging their performance in this debate, the way that it was broadcast. And I will tell you, regardless of what his book seems to at least imply to the opponents on the other side of the table, despite the racial implications that apparently they saw in this book that they keep bringing up, Peter Brimlow, at least in this performance, seems uncomfortable with just saying, yeah, it's about fucking white people. He seems uncomfortable just stating the obvious. And he certainly doesn't bring up anything about Jewish influence. And I don't know everything about Peter Brimlow. He's the founder of VDare. People still, know who he's still to some degree relevant today. My understanding is there's not a whole lot of naming the Jew over at VDare. Let me just put it that way. that's an issue. That's a blind spot you can't have. Especially in a situation like this where almost all of his opponents are Jews who are making Jewish arguments, who their entire identity is wrapped up in their opposition to his worldview. Their identity is Jews. And your inability to at least point this out makes you ineffectual. Just as ineffectual as it makes you when you can't say that, yes, this is about European people having a right to a homeland, and that homeland specifically being the United States, Canada, and all the other countries in the Anglosphere. And that's, by the way, why it doesn't matter that I've got an English accent and that I myself am an immigrant, because I'm of those people. I could have come here last week and it wouldn't matter. And again, maybe before, during, or after this period, he was more explicit about race. But in this debate, he seems to be avoiding the issue.
So immigration is typically a policy where A and B get together. We have A and B and C here and decide what C should do for D. And D, C in this case is our children. Our children have been asked to decide. I've been asked to handle the consequence of these decisions which are being made now. Immigration is out of control, both illegal immigration and legal immigration. Legal immigration because of the peculiar workings of the 1965 Act. We must never forget that this is a policy, a government policy, and it works in very paradoxical ways. The US is being transformed against its will, as measured by opinion polls, by accident, to no economic advantage whatever, a thing which I spend a great deal of time on, alien nation, and the American people haven't been asked. There has never been a transformation like this in the history of the world. We're not saying that it won't necessarily work, but we're saying that it's a risk, and the American people should be asked whether they want to take that risk.
Now, this is a point that he makes. That is a point that you hear a lot of nationalists make. Again, specifically, you hear a lot of the UK nationalists say we were never asked. And it's just a truism. The native populations of all of the white countries that are being flooded with immigrants were never asked. And if they would have been, would have opposed it. Without exception. Just because no one wants to be replaced by immigrants. And so that is a valid point. That is something you should bring up. And it does, because this is a valid point, it does cause the mask to slip later on in the debate, which you'll see shortly. But it's still, you can tell that he's loathe to mention things other than the idea, well, you didn't ask them, it's a risk. If you're gonna ask your grandchildren, or if you're gonna have a society take a gamble, and the people that are gonna have to pay the price of this gamble are your grandchildren, then you should be really fucking sure it's gonna work, because otherwise you're damning your grandchildren to a fate that they had no part in. You're gonna basically make them pay for the sins of the father, is another way to put it. And look, I wish just that alone was a concept that a lot of boomers understood, and they seemed completely unaware of this way of thinking, not just when it comes to immigration, but to a great deal when it comes to policy and governing white Western countries. But that said, he still seems to want to focus on this economic argument. That a lot of the problems are going to be economic in nature, at least as of the way he's arguing now. And that's unfortunately, you can argue all day long about economics, and it's just not compelling. And it's obviously there's other problems with that, because economics is kind of like voodoo. You know, economics can be manipulated. And economics is not what a nation's about.
We should have a pause in immigration precisely to allow that great debate to take place, and to allow the immigration policy to be reformed on some rational basis.
Now, that's the that's kind of like the big thing that they're trying to push in 95, or at least this. Obviously, it went nowhere. But the idea was, let's have a complete immigration pause so that we can work it out. Well, here's the problem with that. Everyone knows what you're doing. They know that you're saying let's pause it, but you really want to hit the stop button. Everyone knows this. And everyone knows that, like, okay, well, what's this debate that you want to have that we have to hit the stop button first? Why don't we just have it now? What are you so embarrassed about? And it is the racial component. And that's the problem with what's going on today with the same people, the Republican Party. You hear people say, oh, let's hit the pause button until we get a handle on shit. Well, you're never going to be able to get a handle on shit if you can't talk about the racial component, because that is the problem.
In your book, Alien Nation, you make the statement that race is destiny.
So this is the Italian guy. Again, they keep making references to this book. It sounds like the book's maybe kind of based. I haven't read it. But they, because it's kind of based, they seem to focus more on his book than the actual topic at hand, which might have been, again, no half measures. If you're going to write a book like that, then you can't shy away from these accusations when you're on TV. You have to double down and say, yeah, race is destiny. If that's indeed what the book says, I don't know. I haven't read it. Then you shouldn't be embarrassed by it.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, I didn't make that statement, Frank, as you perfectly well know, because we've been through this many times before. What I said was, race is destiny in American politics. And that goes to a difference between American politics and European politics. European politics, political allegiance is determined by class. In American politics, political allegiance is determined by race.
See, he dances around it. What he's saying is there are biological differences in the voting patterns of Americans, and you know that follow lines of race. That certain racial groups vote in certain ways. That's just one of many ethnic problems. But he seems uncomfortable with just embracing that. Yeah, yes, I did say that. And what I meant by that was that if you change the race of America to 100% Mexican, America would be Mexico. Why get uncomfortable with it? Why try to say, well, no, you're putting words in my mouth. Actually, what I said was, and then just sort of say the same thing in like a more convoluted way.
In fact, the Asian community is very supportive of the Republican Party. In fact, most foreign-born Asians vote Asian-born immigrants vote Republican than Democrat. So how can you say that race is destiny in American politics? And upwards of 40% of Hispanics vote Republican as well. It seems to me that both of those major new groups of immigrants are up for grabs politically. So how can you say...
That appears to me to mean, Frank, that 60% of Hispanics vote Democratic. And that's also true.
But that's the fact
a substantial number.
How can race be destiny in American politics, major groups are up for grabs?
I don't agree that they are. I mean, it's quite clear that Hispanics are predominantly a Democratic group, although, of course, it's a very variegated category, Hispanic. It's not really a true, a very good analytical category. Asians, we just don't have any numbers on. Less than 1% of them voted in the presidential election last year. So we just really don't know what they're going to do. But, of course, what you're doing here is conceding my point, which is that these groups do differ systematically from the rest of the population according to ethnicity. And therefore, by controlling the ethnic inflow in one way or another, you are going to alter the future of American politics. And the question is why?
Yeah, the question is actually why, if you're able to establish this, that different racial groups vote in different ways, that they wouldn't be different in a number of ways. That would extend to all aspects of life and not just voting patterns. And what he's talking about when he's talking about the Hispanics and the way they're categorizing it, he's talking about the Cuban immigrants, because they are fresh from Castro's Cuba, when they came to Florida, typically would vote more Republican because they were anti-communist, because they fled communist Cuba. And so what that made the numbers a little squishy, because you've got all these immigrants from south of the border, Mexico and Central America, who voted much more Democrat. And then you had these Cubans that kind of, you know, screwed the numbers up a little bit, or skewed them. Increasingly, you're seeing that that's not even the, now we're in this tricky situation, right? Because what was happening was the children and grandchildren of these Cuban immigrants were voting more and more left. Well, what did you just hear about this last election? Oh, all these Hispanics, they voted for Trump. All these, it's amazing. It's up for grabs, as they just said. So I guess the problem's solved, right? Well, it is if all you do is reduce it to political parties. If you act as if the Republican Party of 1995 is identical to the Republican Party of 2025. And not that the Republican Party of 2025 is to the left of the Democrat Party in 1995, which it is. Trump's Republican Party is to the left of the Democrat Party in 1995, precisely because they wanted to attract non-white votes. So inevitably, that's what happens. It's not that Hispanics, oh, finally, we knew it would pay off eventually. Eventually, if we held out long enough, Hispanics would finally be able to wrap their head around this shit and start voting for Republicans like good little fucking spicks. No. It's because, just like Elon loves saying, I didn't leave the Democrat Party left me. Now, the Republican Party came and met the Mexicans and the Indians and Elon Musk. But it's a lost opportunity when you can't talk about... You got your opponent to admit there are racial differences in a measurable way. You know, voting patterns. Why would that be the end of it? Oh, we're all identical. We're all empty vessels. We're all like these, you know, automatons. We're all exactly the same, except for voting patterns. It's fucking stupid.
In your book, you mention that we are attracting most immigrants from the third world, that they are, quote, visible minorities, that INS waiting rooms look like New York subways, and that you seem to be disturbed by the skin color of immigrants rather than the content of their character. And I was wondering if you could respond to that.
I've said repeatedly in the book, I don't know if I have to tattoo it on my head, that I'm confident that the American assimilative mechanism can assimilate anybody. They could assimilate Martians here. But they can't do it without a pause. It also helps if the Martians are skilled. And one of the key criticisms of the 1965 Immigration Act is that it skewed the skill levels downwards, so that for the first time we see an immigrant inflow which is less skilled than the American native-born on average, which in turn is why immigrants are 9% on welfare as opposed to Americans, native-born Americans 7% and native-born American whites 5%.
See, and there you had the huge lost opportunity. You have this buffoonish, low IQ content of your character. Let's bring a Martin Luther fucking King, fucking grade school argument. And instead of just confronting that and saying, race is not skin deep. There are much bigger differences between Africans and Europeans than just the color of their skin. He does the opposite. He says that we could fucking assimilate Martians as long as they're skilled. So I guess that means all this mass immigration that Elon Musk wants to have with these East Indians, that's what's wrong with that? He says that he thinks the Americans can assimilate anyone. There just has to be a pause first. Why? Is this machine, this assimilation machine, Does it just need to have the batteries need to get recharged? This doesn't make any sense at all. See, it's frustrating because you'll hear the opponent say, they'll characterize his book as though it said something kind of based, right? Like he's, oh, you mentioned in your book that you've got all these visible minorities. And, you know, it's essentially implying that it is about non-whites. And when given the opportunity to say, yeah, he shrinks away from it. And in fact, makes his opponent's argument for them, saying that, oh no, we could assimilate anyone. Well, then what's the point? Why do we need a pause? I don't see a sense of urgency here for a pause. If we could assimilate Martians, as long as they're skilled, I mean, I don't see what's so urgent about hitting the pause button. It doesn't sound like there's really going to be a big problem, really, if we can get anyone to assimilate and become American.
And we are attracting a tremendous number of skilled immigrants. 40% of the engineers in Silicon Valley, one of the most high-growth areas in the United States, are foreign-born. Many, many small businesses, which is the engine of growth in this country, are immigrant entrepreneurs. Many of the foreign trade and export-oriented industries that are such a motor.
Is this a question, Frank?
Yes, it is. So given those facts, in your study, have you in fact concluded that immigration does not create economic growth, does not boost the economy of the United States for all of us?
First of all, there's a consensus among economists that immigration is not necessary for economic growth. It does nothing that Americans couldn't do for themselves by other institutional means. Economic growth has actually slowed down since before the Act. 15 years before 1965, immigration was economic growth was faster than it was afterwards.
Okay, you can go on the offensive when you're through.
And then you have the Jewish moderator shut it down, even though it was just he was making another stupid economic argument when this is not about economics.
Economists from across the spectrum of Nobel laureates in this century, they were asked, is immigration a benefit or not? 81% said yes, and the other 19% said somewhat. Not one of them said it was negative.
But you must realize that Nobel laureate economists often vote Democratic.
And they are often Jewish. In fact, they were, at the time of this airing, 33% Jewish. 1% of the population, or actually less than that, because Nobel laureates, that's worldwide. The Nobel laureates for economics, from the time they started, they added that to the Nobel Prize, which was in the 1960s, to 1995, a third of them were Jewish. But, you know, I guess that's an irrelevant figure, huh? What's more important are these figures that have nothing to do with race at all, or ethnicity, when the entire issue you're debating is race and ethnicity. Let's talk about all these nonsense, foggy economic statistics that no one really gives a fuck about.
Now, the question is, why shouldn't the American people be allowed to have their way on this? If they want immigration reform, why can't they have it?
Let me address the proposition. You like to talk about how legal immigration needs to be reduced, and I fundamentally reject that. I do believe that illegal immigration needs to be reduced. There is a big difference.
What about the American people and their opinions?
The American people believe that most immigrants are coming in illegally, and they're badly misinformed, and I believe too many have read your book, and as a result, they are misinformed.
And you'll hear this repeated. It doesn't matter what the Americans think or want. They're fucking idiots. They don't know what's good for them. And they say it. Not just this guy, not this Italian fuck here, but every single one of his Jewish buddies will say the exact same thing. They just phrase it differently and sometimes a little more harshly. So next up, you get Arianna Huffington, like I said, whose accent is so thick, it's comical. There's no reason to have her there except to look stupid. You automatically look stupid. If she wasn't blowing like that, the other guys, I don't know why she was there. There's no reason for her to be there. She's not hardcore. Even back then when she was a Republican, She's even way less hardcore than the rest of the panel. And she, again, she comes across as like a joke because she's clearly foreign.
I want to begin by addressing the apparent irony of somebody with my clear immigrant accent being on this side of the debate.
They're laughing. That's the first thing she had to say because it was so fucking obvious. She added nothing to this debate. It just made people look stupid.
I remember talking to a couple, a black couple near Santiago. They're making, together, less than $30,000 a year. And they were wondering, why should they be paying? Why should their hard-earned taxpayer dollars go to pay for illegal immigrants on welfare?
Ah, yes. Good job, sweetheart. The real victims are the black people. We've all heard this argument before. They're so adverse to just talking about what the actual problem is, they go so far as to take it to a ridiculous extreme. The real victims of mass immigration into America are the black people. And MAGA does the same fucking stupid shit. And they freak out and have little high-five parties when they see a black mayor. Say that, no, we can't handle all these immigrants coming into New York. Beast! Beast black guy said it. Yeah, beast black guy said it. The same fucking stupid shit was happening in 1995. Oh, the real victims of mass immigration in America, it's the fucking blacks.
The America into which the immigrants arrive today is a very different America than the America of the past. The last 30 years of bankrupt welfare policies, the tragedy of bilingual education and multicultural experiments have turned America into a nation in crisis, incapable of absorbing and assimilating high numbers of immigrants wherever they come from. My problem is not where they come from, Peter, whether they are white or black or Asian. My problem is that the explosive mixture today is the welfare society together with high levels of immigration.
See, it doesn't matter where they come from. The only problem is the mixture of having a welfare state and immigration. So mass immigration in and of itself is not even an issue. It's not even a problem. It's only a problem when you also have a welfare state. And you've seen people try to do the same exact arguments when it comes to, you know, European immigration. Well, we can't take all these immigrants because it's a drain on our system, as if the racial component is non-existent. These are losing arguments. That's why they've lost for the last 40 fucking years. This is Ira Glasser. Ira Glasser of the ACLU.
And some people on your side, notably Mr. Brimelow, would support the reimposition of national origin quotas. To restore our population balance to what he in his book calls the pre-1965 levels, around 90% white. It is impossible. I notice him nodding now, but that's because the people in the audience can't read his book. But it is impossible to read that book without repeatedly seeing it. Why don't you hand it to me and I'll get you the page. What I wanted to know from you is, do you support the reimposition of national origin quotas that would change the composition of who comes into the country as distinct from the absolute numbers?
No, A, I don't support it, and B, I think it has nothing to do with the resolution today. The resolution is about drastic reductions to the numbers of immigrants coming to this country. The resolution says nothing about ethnic origin, nothing about color, and this is just a red herring on your side of the debate.
See, it doesn't matter. It's just a distraction that you fucking liberals make it about race when it's not about race. You're the real racist. Like, it's fucking retarded. It's fucking retarded, but she's retarded enough to where that probably is what she thinks. There's no reason for her to be there. I have no idea why the fuck she's there. Because she basically agrees with the opposition almost 100%. So it's a fucking joke to even have her there.
Whether or not the calls for the drastic reduction of size are a pretext for the change in composition. Now, you want to talk about that. We keep being told by your side, we want to talk about this. We want to put it on the table, and we don't want to be called racist for doing so. Well, I'm not calling anybody a racist. I'm just putting it on the table. You put it there. Now you don't want to talk about it.
No. What I want to talk about the resolution on the table today. And what I'm saying is that there is such a thing as an American identity, but it has nothing to do with ethnic origin and nothing to do with color. But there is such a thing as an American identity, and that's why it's important to assimilate immigrants so that they become part of the American identity. I don't care what Americans are going to look like in the year 2050.
Well,
I don't
maybe
care
you
if they
come
look
over on this side.
Exactly. Maybe she should go to the other side of the table, cuz just like Ben Shapiro, she doesn't give a goddamn about the browning of America. These were the people arguing for you. Now again, she's the worst example on that side of the table. But Jesus Christ, that's who you had arguing for you. And then, of course, we got Leon Botstein. Let's see what Botstein has to say.
Are you aware of the fact that in the 19th century, the American identity was shaped by a very gradual loss of language, and that loss of language is happening now by studies done about the shift from ancestral language to current language? You make the assertion, without any factual basis at all, that in fact there is no assimilation happening, when there, in fact, is enormous assimilation, not to speak of the fact that American identity today, look at the advertising language, is a result of immigration, Jewish, Italian, and Irish. So it's a fluctuating identity to begin with.
See, if you can't say American identity has anything to do with race, you can define it however this fucking Jew wants to. It can be about the loss of your native language and the assimilation just linguistically to American English. Apparently that's all it takes. That's why he, even though he was born outside the country, that's why he's just as American as anyone else. If you can't be explicit about the racial component to mass immigration, you will fucking lose, and you will be replaced, and you'll be genocided. And people like this fucker will do it, with a smile on his fucking face.
English and be part of the mainstream.
They're not being deprived. In fact, immigrant populations for generations were taught German, Polish. Today, in this day in Chicago, you can go to Polish neighborhoods in Chicago and see the level of Polish is not that admirable, the continuing use of Polish. What I'm suggesting is that there were newspapers and schools in the history of America doing exactly what's happening
now. But
they
were being taught by their parents, by their schools. They're
no,
not
by public
being taught
schools.
By taxpayer
by
money.
By public schools in rural Midwest in the 19th century, there was exclusively German taught.
You need to go to Los Angeles and talk to the people who are leading the movement against bilingual education.
Because there's been a racism against immigrants in this country from the very beginning.
And you're going to be called a racist anyway, sweetheart. You're going to be called a racist anyway. See, look, and if it's about language, he's not wrong. If it's just about language, the German immigrants that came to America didn't speak English. And it might have taken a generation or two to pick up English. And they might have had schools that taught German. In fact, we know that's a little bit true. When I did the stream about Postville, a small town in the Midwest that was destroyed by Jews with multiracialism, bringing in mass numbers of illegal immigrants from south of the border, they talked about how just generations prior that there were schools and churches that spoke only German, because it was a German, it was a rural German farming town in America. So why, if that's the only difference, right? If assimilation is so dependent on language as it seems to be, well, you didn't have a problem with the Germans. You see, you come across as inconsistent. You come across as not knowing what the fuck you're talking about. You come across as kind of shady and shifty. And these guys look like they're exposing you. It's not just racist, secret racist, which is worse.
The talk about numbers is pretextual. It is over-exaggerated in the extreme. The number of immigrants who come in, including illegals, each year now is at about 1 million. If the present commission's recommendations has its way, it'll be cut by about 1/3. That's 1 million against some 258 million people, a very small percentage. We had 1 million coming in 1910. That was against a population of 90 million, a much larger percentage. The numbers are simply not that big.
Again, the 1 million coming in 1910 were almost exclusively white. Well, in comparison to the numbers in 1995. And it doesn't matter if it's a small percentage. All it takes is a small percentage to poison the well. You know, here's a large beaker full of water. Watch as they drop less than 1% of green food coloring. It doesn't take a large percentage to alter the makeup of a substance or a people. It's fucking retarded. But that's what you end up in these little games, these little fucking games about percentages and numbers that no one gives a fuck about, when you can't just be honest about the problem.
Most economists, including the conservative Julian Simon, says that if we have fewer immigrants, we will be poorer. We will have a larger federal deficit. We will have a worse position of international competition. He says flatly, and said so to Mr. Brimelow in a debate recently, that if we can reduce the number of immigrants if we want, but we will make American citizens poorer, that the higher level is better for us economically. Even Professor Borjas, who is your side's favorite, says that the economic issues are at best indecisive. Mr. Brimelow says that repeatedly in his book and says we have to go to something else. The something else is the nature of the American character, and we want to keep it the way it was before 1965. Now, what does that mean exactly? If it doesn't mean numbers and it doesn't mean economic consequences, what does it mean?
It means race, and because you can't say it, you guys look like you're hiding something, because you are. He looks like he's exposing an evil that you're ashamed of. And he's got you by the balls because you are ashamed of it, or something's preventing you from saying it.
Hear about dueling economists, all of whom agree that the differences are small. So why is this big debate? What is this big debate about? And the big debate about, which you want to run away from, is that we did something in 1965, but it was more than just the numbers, because the 65 legislation left the numbers where they were at the time. What it did is it changed the American character. And I would like somebody on this side of the panel to tell me, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean by that? If you were honest, this whole debate would have been over in like 5 seconds. See, that's all they've got. That's all they have to do. All they have to do is keep pointing out that you're too much of a pussy to admit that it's about race. And when you start to bring up these other things about economics, you can always argue that, it's insignificant. Most people their eyes are going to glaze over anyway. They don't give a fuck. You can even try to make the argument, well, we were never asked.
Every poll taken shows 2/3 of the American people in favor of reducing illegal immigration, and indeed legal immigration. Look at the results of Proposition 187.
Let me tell you something about the American
people and the
half. Since you're an immigrant yourself, let me tell you something about the American people in polls. In 1950, all the polls showed that they were in favor of segregation too, didn't they? The American people, in terms of what the polls show, is not the way we do business in this country.
It's not the way we do business in this country. The mask is off. We were never asked. That doesn't fucking matter. That's not how we do business. That's not how we decide things. What you want. What you want has never mattered. Because you're going to show up and vote every election season anyway. You're going to just keep taking it. There is no repercussions for these people when they fuck you over. So why would they care? Why would they give a fuck? You haven't done anything yet. The white people didn't want to end segregation either. And look how that went, is what he's saying. That's not how we fucking do business in this country. We will drag you kicking and screaming. And you know what? You're not even going to do that much kicking or screaming because you're so embarrassed. You're so shamed into submission in the first place. There's not a whole lot of squeak. You know, they say the squeaky wheel gets the grease. There's not a whole lot of squeak, is there? Because you're all terrified of being called a racist.
Mr. Glasser, you must realize that you've walked into Dan's trap here. He was asking you about the...
He's referencing... Earlier, it was kind of messy, so I didn't put that clip in there because it was just too long for them to get around to it. Dan Stein mentions that immigration, you know, we've heard this argument too, immigration wasn't good for Native Americans. Mass immigration was not good. It was not a good outcome for Native Americans. Again, racial component, right? Racial component to that. You had one racial group come in and demographically replace the other. But they couldn't speak about it in those terms. They could just simply say, without explaining why, that immigration, mass immigration, you know, of Europeans into North America was not great for Native Americans. So that's what he's referencing there.
Mr. Glasser, you must realize that you've walked into Dan's trap here. He was asking you about the effect of immigration on the native-born Americans. The point there is precisely, surely, that it can radically alter a society.
And yes, if you kill them all, that's true.
I see.
That's true. If you let them open up businesses and have economic mobility, it's less true, as most of us in this room are evident.
Are you aware that immigrants, on average, are less likely to open up businesses than the native-born?
I am not aware of that.
Good.
Because it isn't
true. Are you
true.
Aware of the... It is true. It shows up in the census.
No, it is not true.
You really must read my book, Alien Nation.
Oh, I have.
Alien Nation, Random
I
House,
have,
$24.
And I used up all my supply of Alka-Seltzer after I did. Your book,
I'm
Mr. Grimmel...
I'm delighted to hear that. You must read it again.
Your book was characterized by your favorite economist, Julian Simon, as suffused by race. Your book and every other page worries about your little son, Alexander, growing up in a world which is non-white. Your book characterizes non-white immigrants as typified by Colin Ferguson. Your book worries about going down into the subway, where people are almost entirely colored.
Let me ask you. Let me ask
my
you a question.
Who use the subway
What is your agenda here? Why do you want to transform
agenda
America?
Is exposing
Why
you.
Do you want to transform
my
America?
My agenda is exposing you.
And a rhetorical win for the opposition because he couldn't just own up to. If indeed, again, I haven't read the book, but apparently. There's language in there at the very least that implies that he's worried about his children growing up in a non-white America. And he should be worried about that, especially now, right? So why not just say it? Because when you don't say it, you leave yourself open to looking like you've been, quote-unquote, exposed by the clever Jew who has caught you up.
So let me ask you another question. Talking about the attitude of America, in 1933, if you had given a poll of Americans whether they should open the doors, or in the late 30s, 1938, to the Jews of Europe, would you have thought that was an adequate answer, that they didn't want more Jews in the United States? And
see, once again, not only is this obviously a massive... But it's also, Americans can't be trusted with their destiny. Americans often choose the path of racism. Americans, which he now magically understands, by the way, to mean white people. They're inherently evil, they're inherently racist, and if we allowed them to do what they wanted to do, then they would have been complicit in the genocide of Jews. Wiping out the Indians, perpetuating the evil of segregation. It doesn't matter. The reason why we didn't ask them is because we knew what the answer would be, and fuck them. That's not how we do business in this country.
So let me ask you another question. Talking about the attitude of America, in 1933, if you had given a poll of Americans whether they should open the doors, or in the late 30s, 1938, to the Jews of Europe, would you have thought that was an adequate answer, that they didn't want more Jews in the United States, and therefore our restrictive quota policy led indirectly to the death of millions of Jews? What would you say about this?
This is called the St. Louis Gambit.
The
suggestion is that we should have moved 6
million people. I'm a descendant of one of the few survivors.
Well, but the point is that at that point in time, or even today, we cannot accept everyone who wants to come here. And if you have to have a totally cavalier attitude about what the public thinks on this issue or any issue, or to say, well, democracy doesn't matter, polls don't matter, there is a very clear increase in intensity of public concern about this issue. And if you let the ivory tower inside the Beltway eggheads decide how many people come in without regard to its impact on schools and hospitals and the labor market and all the highly impacted areas, you're asking for trouble.
I don't know if they are. This is Dan Stein of AFAIR pointing out that pro-immigration side, again, repeatedly seems to state that what Americans want doesn't matter because, again, they seem to have no problem with the concept that, in this context, that Americans means white people. And white people apparently keep choosing the race the wrong way. And so it's up to these Jews who have recently arrived, despite the racist roadblocks that the whites put up in front of them, it's up to them to smash those roadblocks and open the floodgates. And Dan Stein seems to imply that, well, if you keep ignoring what the American people, which again, I think, whether he's explicit about it or not, and he's not, he also means white people, there's going to be a problem. Well, I don't know. We're way less white today, 30 years later. So I don't know what was the problem exactly for these eggheads in Washington.
Mr. Stein, your group calls for a moratorium on immigration, essentially zero immigration policies, as I understand it,
several
much like the far-right parties in Europe. How, since immigration policy is based on reunifying husbands, wives, children, brothers, sisters.
Brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts.
That's not true. You know that. You know that's not true. Don't misinform the American people. It does not. The siblings is the most extended category, and waiting lists are 18 years.
You're eating up my time.
Let's just get the facts straight so we can have a sensible debate. Now, families won't be reunited, refugees won't be rescued, and American businesses won't be able to attract the kind of skilled international personnel they need. Does that serve American national interests?
That's not a characterization of what our immigration policy is. About 90% of immigrants come simply because a relative came earlier. And many relatives who come today are relatives of relatives through the petitioning process. Look, if you look at our chromosomes, hey, we're all related if you go back far enough. And it's like at some point you have to use a rational...
You've
got to ask the basic
question,
what's the purpose of immigration? Are we trying to fill up a continent? Are we underpopulated? Is there not enough traffic, not enough congestion. I mean, we don't have immigration as a national need. In the way that we once did as a young, thriving nation, immigration is not serving any key and major national interest objectives. And that's why we're going to have this extraordinarily important national debate.
Strengthening families isn't a national need.
Mr. Codd.
See, and this would be a perfect opportunity for you to then say what the need that it is addressing is the need to replace white Americans. The need, the reason why, it's so puzzling, we can't understand. Well, it doesn't make any sense, again, if you take the racial component out of it. And at least he does have an opportunity to clarify that, yes, the chain migration, despite what this guy said, it does mean that aunts and uncles.
When you said a moment ago, uncles and aunts, and you know that that's not true, and then you don't respond to his inquiry on that, isn't that why the people in...
This is a Polish Jew, Ed Koch, by the way, if you don't know.
...in this country believe that immigration is out of control because people like you have given them...
I have given nothing.
That's number one.
Let me answer the question. If I come in as an immigrant, I can bring in immediately my spouse and my minor children. After I become a citizen, I can bring my parent and my married brothers and sisters. This is what the commission's looking at. My married brothers and sisters and my married adult sons and daughters. When my parent comes in, he or she, when she becomes a citizen, can bring in her brother or sister. That's my uncle and aunt. Now, why are you telling me that that's not the case when it is, Ed?
That is exactly how the chain migration works, and that's how it'll be accelerated under H-1B-1 visa stuff. A lot of people don't understand this. Then when you talk about skilled immigrants, you're literally talking about their entire family fucking tree. That is how it works. That's how it's worked for decades, and none of that has changed. And they've all lied about it over and over and over again, like just like in the case of Ed Koch and the spaghetti guy that's on his team.
And I am simply saying that to say that the public wants this, the public wants, regrettably, on many occasions, that which the demagogues have urged them to demand. And it's wonderful when people stand up and say, this I will do, this I will not. If you don't like it, throw me out.
All right.
And there's Ed Koch agreeing with the rest of the people on his side of the table. What the people want doesn't fucking matter. The people often want things that are bad. And that's really the difference, if you think about it. That's the difference between the people who win and the people who lose. There's Churro over there. The people who lose always expect that the people that they send to Washington are going to do what they want.
My parents were immigrants. They came here in the early 1900s, and they had three children, and one of them became the mayor of the city of New York. I think that we all congratulate Peter Brimlow on the fact that his wife and he are going to have a child momentarily to be born, and I hope that that child someday could be the mayor or the governor of whatever town you're living in.
In what country you're living in at that point.
But I say to myself, it's a travesty. Here you are. You came here as an immigrant. Your wife came here as an immigrant. Your son or daughter is going to have all of what this country can give. And you have the effrontery in your book to say not only that this has got to stop, but there was, I believe, a statement saying that Hitler got his revenge in this period through the immigration situation that we have in the United States. I think that's a travesty. That's an outrage to suggest that what we have in the United States, and having brought in the millions from Southern Europe as well as Northern Europe, that that's a travesty. Then finally, as I said to you, Ariana, I'm a great admirer, but they wanted to keep out the Greeks in 1924. And had you come at that earlier time, we wouldn't have had the privilege and pleasure of meeting you.
And there you go. He points out the hypocrisy that if you're going to just make this about, race doesn't matter, And now you look stupid. You know, if race doesn't matter, and it's all about just immigration and numbers, then you immigrants shouldn't even be here. And it doesn't matter. You know, look, you can make an intellectual argument that shows this to be kind of fallacious, but it doesn't really matter. But when it comes to persuasion, this is the kind of rhetoric that makes you look fucking retarded.
Sure, you recognize that the reason why I describe the 1965 Act as Hitler's revenge is because it's the hysteria, the anti-racist hysteria that prevails since then, as we see exemplified by Leon and Ira here. It's so great that we can't have rational discussion on the question.
But you see, Peter, when you say we can't have rational discussion, it is because you know that it's just unacceptable to take a position that the reason that you don't want our immigration law is that it's bringing in too many blacks, bringing in too many Hispanics, it's bringing in too many Asians. And in fact, that is the argument that you give, that these people will not be acculturated. They won't. They in fact will if you give them the opportunity.
And the pause. And the pause.
No, I don't think the pause has any. That pause is baloney.
And look, it is baloney. If all it takes is a pause to get all these people to suddenly become just like European Americans, then it is kind of stupid. Where's the urgency? If indeed he's arguing that he doesn't want more of these brown and black people into the country, that should be his argument. And he can't, simultaneously, he's trying to say, this is what sucks. Simultaneously, you'd think that at first when Hitler's mentioned, you're like, oh, Peter Brimelow must be base. He's talking about fucking Hitler. No. What he's simultaneously saying is that Hitler has created an environment that is so anti-racist, which, by the way, this is true. Post-World War II Western countries were so afraid of being called racist because of the vast amount of anti-Hitler war propaganda they were subjected to, and plus all the influence of the Jews coming to their countries after World War II. Of course, he's going to leave that part of it out. The role they had in changing attitudes in America and other Western countries in terms of racial solidarity and racial purity and accepting other races is just, everyone's the same, that kind of fucking bullshit. He's saying that because of this residue, this post-World War II residue, that we can't have these rational conversations about immigration because everyone's so afraid of being called a racist, but then he's afraid of being called a racist. It blows the fucking mind. And again, I don't know, maybe his book was way more based and he was way more direct and less evasive about these topics, but it doesn't matter. I'm judging the performance of this debate, and it's horrendous. It's horrendous. It makes you look like schizophrenic to simultaneously say that you're so worried about all this anti-racist rhetoric driving people to hysteria, but then you yourself are afraid of being called a racist. It doesn't make any fucking sense. And so all it takes is some charismatic Polish Jew to say, oh, that's baloney, and the whole crowd laughs.
The question of why you think that it is going to be more difficult for today's immigrants to assimilate into the American political culture than it was for the Irish, for the Spanish, for the Italians, for the Jews, for the Greeks, were said at the time to be impossible to assimilate.
For two reasons, both of which I adumbrated in my opening remarks. Number one, we permit bilingual education, whereas the great universalizing experience during the preceding 150 years was you had to speak the language that you spoke. Number two, we have a welfare system which reduces those economic pressures to conform to a system in which one has to make one's own way. This is no longer the case. Now, that pressure for so many years did two things. On the one hand, it put pressure on the immigrant to make his way economically, and also galvanized the philanthropic instincts of people in his community who helped him or her during hard times. That is no longer here, and those are critical differences.
Both of those reasons seem to me unpersuasive for this reason. One is that there was a lot more bilingual education, as Professor Botstein has said, than you are admitting. And the difference is not bilingual education back then. And the differences are simply not as sharp as you say. Second of all, immigrant populations today are generationally learning English at least as fast a rate, and most of the studies show at a faster rate than previous generations. Number three, if your problem is bilingual education, work to get rid of it, even if I'm wrong about the other two facts. But why you would want to keep other people from coming in because of that, I don't understand.
Again, that's just more of the nonsense, because you can't just say race.
I don't understand. Given the intermarriage rates now, 1 out of 3 immigrants marries outside their group. 1 out of 2 of their children marries outside of their group. Okay. Don't you have confidence that this intermarriage and assimilation process is so strong that it can even supersede the power of the welfare state and multiculturalism?
No, not 100%, because the divorce rate has risen by 400% during the same period. So maybe some of these things aren't working quite well. The Jewish community is frightened to death by the amount of intermarriage, which would, if you projected, would mean there'd be no Jews left.
And there you see the hypocrisy of the person who can't be pro-white, but he can be pro-Jewish. It's okay for him to say that Jews are worried about interracial marriages, breeding them out. But for whatever reason, Buckley cannot talk about the same problem affecting whites. He can't use that as part of his argument. So really, what he's saying just seems kind of random and anecdotal. It seems like a problem for Jews. The white people in the audience watching this at home aren't going to connect to that. Okay, so I guess Jews are worried about assimilating to some, I mean, you mentioned that there's an increase in divorce rates, and possibly it has something to do with, you know, the intermingling of people, and maybe it does, but I mean, again, it's just a number. It certainly isn't as persuasive as saying, yeah, actually these intermarriages that you're talking about, this inbreeding that you're talking about, or interbreeding rather, you're talking about the destruction of our people. In the same way that, you know, you're using this Jewish example, you can't say the same thing about whites, and that's why you've lost the argument, because you have none.
Would you agree that this is a very different America into which immigrants arrive than the America of opportunities, where hard work was rewarded either by success or at least by a decent living? The America they come into now is the America of rights, entitlements, the welfare state. Wouldn't you see a great difference that therefore requires different immigration policies?
No.
Literally the Chad no meme. Because you're being dishonest. That's how easy it is to defeat you. And she's stuck there with a stupid, embarrassed grin on her face.
Are you saying that America is not different after the great society efforts of the last 30 years? The fact that they can come here, and whether they succeed or not, whether they can make a living or not, they can stay on welfare. This is what drives the Americans nuts. And your side may not like that. You may your coach, you call them a mob. Somebody else here said these are just poll numbers that we don't believe in. Look at the fact that 187 won by 4,700,000 Americans voting against illegal immigrants being on welfare and receiving free education and free health.
Now, the funny thing about this, she's talking about Prop 187, and it's something I've mentioned before. In California, and look, it bolsters the argument that the Jews here are using, that it really doesn't matter what the people want, because the American people in California, of all places, were able to get a ballot measure that would bar illegal immigrants from using social services. This is her big thing. She's complaining about that. Oh, I don't care about legal immigration. It's just, I don't think that we should have illegal immigrants coming and using up all of our welfare services. It's an economic problem, whatever, right? And she points out that, oh, there was this referendum here and it passed, which proves that that's how the American people think about this issue. Because even in California, it passed. Well, the funny thing is just after this aired, a Jewish federal judge by the name of Mariana Feltzer issued an injunction halting the enforcement of Prop 187. And then by 1997, she ruled it unconstitutional. Because that's not how we do business in America. It doesn't matter what the goys want. They all said loud and clear, using the political process, they did not want illegal immigrants using welfare services in the state of California. And the Jews said, who cares? Who cares what you think, Goy? I'm a foreigner from Eastern Europe who has barely been here a generation, and I've interpreted your constitution, our founding fathers. I know what they meant by this, and I've decided it's unconstitutional as this foreigner. And now it's law. It doesn't matter what you want, Goy. You can vote harder all you want. That's not how we do business in this country. You need a reminder?
Every poll taken shows 2/3 of the American people in favor of reducing illegal immigration, and indeed legal immigration. Look at the results of Proposition 187.
Let me tell you something about the American people.
And the House,
since you're an immigrant yourself, let me tell you something about the American people in polls. In 1950, all the polls showed that they were in favor of segregation too, didn't they? The American people, in terms of what the polls show, is not the way we do business in this country.
So let me ask you another question. Talking about the attitude of America, in 1933, if you had given a poll of Americans whether they should open the doors, or in the late 30s, 1938, to the Jews of Europe, would you have thought that was an adequate answer, that they didn't want more Jews in the United States? Policy led indirectly to the death of millions of Jews.
And I am simply saying that to say that the public wants this, the public wants, regrettably, on many occasions, that which the demagogues have urged them to demand. And it's wonderful when people stand up and say, this I will do, this I will not. If you don't like it, throw me out.
All right.
That's right. It's wonderful when District Judge Mariana Feltzer strikes down what the American people wanted with Proposition 187, or literally anything else. It's wonderful when Jews say, fuck you, Goy, and just do it anyway. Because what are you going to do about it? Like, really, what are you going to do about it? Who cares? What were the repercussions? Literally nothing.
Mayor Kotsky, the floor manager in 1965, advocating passage of the immigration bill, which we're talking about.
This part's great. So William F. Buckley here points out that, and you hear this point all the time too, that Kennedy would always say that, it's not going to change the racial, the Immigration Act of 1965. It's not going to change the racial makeup of the country. It's not going to fundamentally change the kinds of immigrants we get, and that it was obviously that was all a lie. And if what I just played wasn't proof enough that the Jews don't give a fuck what the Goy think, listen to this.
Mayor Kotsky, the floor manager in 1965, advocating passage of the immigration bill, which we're talking about, gave the following assurances. First, our cities will not be flooded with 1 million immigrants annually. And so they were. Secondly, the ethnic mix of this country will not be upset. Answer, in fact, it was. And finally, contrary to the charges in some quarters, the bill will not inundate America with immigrants from any one country or area. In fact, it has, for instance, Miami. Now, that was Senator Kennedy. Our point is not that the processes of democracy weren't observed in 1965, as was tossed into the discussion a moment ago, but that the implications of that act weren't sufficiently measured. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, I think it's fair to point out that Senator Kennedy misled, if that's the quote, and I'm sure that it is, but everybody knew what they were doing. Everybody knew what they were doing, in my judgment. And Harry Truman said everybody knew what they were doing when they passed this legislation.
Everyone knew what they were doing, with a shit-eating grin on his face. Of course we lied to you, Goy. Of course we lied to you. What are you going to do about it? Oh, that's right, nothing. Literally nothing.
Aren't you really concerned about the consequences of the 65 Act having to do with the racial distribution who comes to the United States and not the numbers?
No, I think numbers are of the essence. If the numbers could be brought down, then all these other problems would go, even skill levels would go away. And I actually say that in the book, which is why I'm astonished to find Ira Glasser arguing that I'm in favor of ethnic
all right,
quotas.
Thank you, Mr. Brimelow.
See? And when asked to clarify once again, don't you really mean that you're worried about the racial makeup and not just the numbers? No. If the numbers came down, we'd be able to assimilate Martians. Well, this just sounds like weird, irrational, alarmist rhetoric then. You're just worried you're not worried about being replaced. You're just worried about it going too fast. That doesn't make any sense.
And you got the Ford Foundation in there, right?
The Ford Foundation.
And you have and you have church groups.
And church groups.
Right.
Right. Religious, yeah, the Catholic Church. I wonder if Mr. Buckley knows this. The Catholic Church, an immigrant church, traditionally and currently, does very much support immigration. They believe that immigration makes America strong, and I agree with them.
And just I added that just as a reminder, when he was asking the groups that support his immigration agenda, he was quick to point out that the Catholic Church has always supported immigration to America. Why wouldn't they? You know, one of the things they mentioned was that in the beginnings of our country, it was 98% Protestant. Just a little fun fact throwing that in there. But in conclusion, because they're unable to mention the racial component, after this debate raged on for 2 hours, got very repetitive. I apologize for that. You have to be repetitive, because if you can't talk about race, you have nothing to talk about. And because they're so afraid to mention the racial component, they lost the debate. No question, they looked like losers by the end of it. It was taking candy from a baby.
Now, the fact is that when Mr. Botstein asked Mr. Brimelow, aren't you really concerned about the ethnic and racial makeup of the immigrants, not the size? He said, no, if you reduce the size enough, that'll be taken care of. Well, I suppose that's true. But on page 61 of his book, he says the effect of the 1965 Act was not merely on the size of the flow, but that it, quote, dramatically skewed the sources. He goes on to say, they're coming not from Europe, the common homeland. Of course, ignoring the fact that we all came from common homelands that were berated for being racist. The Italians were different, the Swedes were different, the Germans were different, the Irish were different. But we came from a common homeland, and now they're coming from, quote, completely different, arguably incompatible cultural traditions. He goes on to say, quote, an ethnic and racial transformation without precedent in history. He worries on virtually every other page about his son growing up in a world that is no longer predominantly white. Now, the fact is that he doesn't want to be called a racist, and I think that's a legitimate argument to make if you're concerned about that. But I urge liberals and conservatives alike to distance themselves from the darkest and the worst and the most ugly traditions that this country has had. The 1924 Act was a racist act. The 1965 Act was a civil rights act that got rid of national origin discrimination. The 1924 Act came at a time of unbridled racism in this country. It was racist against every immigration group. We do not need to restore that tradition in order to decide how many immigrants to have and what mix of skills we need. Thank you.
And that was it. Now, to clarify, one of the things he's talking about is, and this is kind of funny, they mentioned early on in the debate the Immigration Commission of 1911. Leon Botstein mentioned it, and then obviously it was mentioned again here by, what's his face, Jewy McJew. He said, oh, the racist history of America. Well, let's take a look and see what exactly he was talking about. The Immigration Commission of 1911 was known as the Dillingham Commission. It was a U.S. congressional commission established in 1907 to study and report on immigration trends, their impact on the United States, and potential policy recommendations. It was named after Senator William P. Dillingham, who chaired the commission. The commission released its final report in 1911, which significantly influenced U.S. immigration policy in the early 20th century. Here are the findings that maybe there's a racial reason these Jews have a problem with it. The report divided immigrants into old and new groups. So again, kind of the same way that these guys have been kind of talking about it, where you have old immigrants, meaning largely immigrants from, you know, England and from Germany, versus the new groups, which would be the Eastern European Jews. Old immigrants are from Northern and Western European, England, Germany, Ireland, were considered more assimilatable. New immigrants, those from Southern and Eastern Europe, Italy, Poland, Russia, were portrayed as less desirable and less able to assimilate into American society. Well, you know, the Polish Jews on the panel might take up issue with that. The commission expressed concern about the growing number of new immigrants, claiming they posed economic, social, and cultural challenges. The recommendations were that they restrict immigration policies to reduce the influx of new immigrants, so Eastern European Jews, namely. They proposed literacy tests as a method to filter immigrants, believing this would favor desirable immigrants from Northern and Western Europe. So in other words, if you had an Eastern European Jew that showed up and they couldn't read in English, then they wouldn't be allowed in. The impact of it was that they drastically reduced the immigration from the places, really, the Jews, Eastern European Jews were coming from. And that was rolled into the Act of 1917, which included the literary tests. Then they had quota acts in the 1920s, which again limited the influx of Jews from Eastern European countries. In the commission, here's some quotes from the commission. Quote, the Hebrew is distinctively of a more nervous temperament than other races. Here's another quote. The Hebrew is less easily assimilated than other races and is a persistent foreigner. Here's another quote. The Hebrew immigrant tends to crowd into certain occupations, particularly trade and commerce, and often becomes a competitor of native workers. Here's another quote. The customs and habits of the Hebrew are so different from those of the native-born that they are often objectionable. Here's another quote. There is a noticeable tendency among certain groups of Hebrews toward moral laxity, and particularly in urban centers. And of course, what that's talking about is all the Jewish immigrants that came into New York and created the modern mob, created organized crime in America for the first time. That was largely because of the immigrants coming from Eastern Europe and, you know, and some Italians as well. So, yes, these Jews that are on the panel arguing against the Goys knowing what's best for them have a racial reason for their point of view. And they don't shy away from it, but the whites do. The Goys did. And so they lost the argument. And it's as simple as that. And that's why we'll continue to lose. Until people on our side of the fence can be explicitly pro-white and talk about these things in racial terms and not talk about these things in terms of IQ, although that's not, you know, irrelevant. It's certainly a relevant part of why we need to talk about these things in racial terms. But if you can't talk about these things in racial terms, you will lose. You'll lose over and over and over again because you're lying. You're lying. And that's why we've lost every one of this style of debate for decades. And in fact, this is why you've had MAGA, for example, has had to concede and just say, "Oh yeah, well we need a million Indians," because there's no racial component. And that's why America is not a white country anymore. And unless you can turn that ship around, it never will be. So anyway, I just thought this was important to bring up. The video actually was sent to me by Rebecca, the blonde from, formerly of Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. And now she has that show called the, she's going to get mad because I forgot it. Let me, I told her I would let you guys know that she's doing stuff on Rumble. It's called the, not that I haven't watched it. I just forget the name. The Backlash. So she's got Vincent James and Dave Riley on the show. I said, as a thank you for sending me the video, I said I would promote their new show there. So anyway, you guys can take a look at that. Anyway, let's take a look at Hyper Chats. Now that we've been going for 2.5 hours here. All right. Troy87 says, "I know this has nothing to do with tonight's stream today. I watched We Got Yo Money, the Tinder swindler, and then Turbo Simp, the killing weeb. It's shocking how much the Disney princess and the weeb killer have in common." The Disney princess and the weeb killer. I know what you're talking about. I know what stream you're talking about. I'm just trying to think of, I'm not 100% getting what you mean by, I guess in a way you could say it's like the male version, right? Where he's kind of like this worthless guy that has no, desirability, but he still expects to get like this perfect, I guess it's like the opposite of the Disney princess, right? Channel 012-4957 says, "I would love to see you shill your subscribe star more frequently. It's good to remind people that it exists. People would like to support you regularly. Lots of YouTubers will include a screen at the end of the video where they shout out their Patreon, and I think it's effective." Yeah, you can go to subscribestar.com/ blackpilled if you want to do that. Some people do support me that way, and I really appreciate that. That's a way you can do it and set it up regularly. I'm not very good at shilling my own stuff, as people know, but maybe I should. I do put it, like, it's in the crawl in the intro. It tells you about the subscribe star, but probably most people aren't reading that, so maybe I should bring it up more often. And then you say, "A friendly reminder to my white brothers out there that the Asatru Folk Assembly is a whites-only church with physical congregations that you can visit and join. Community is the way forward. Come out and meet good people." Well, there you go. And again, kudos for being explicitly pro-white, because that's what we have to do. Gorilla Hands!
"I'm just a weekend photographer."
Gorilla Hand says, "Oy vey, I hope that you're not being anti-Semitic, Mr. Stack. Never forget that the good guys won the war." Well, and that's the problem with a lot of these pro-white people in the past. And look, I get that it was a different time. It's a different context. They were in closer proximity to World War II. I understand that maybe it seemed impossible to be pro-white in that kind of an environment. Look, hindsight is 2020, all that stuff, right? And And maybe some of these people did a lot of good, or at least the good that they thought they could. It's, look, it's better than a lot of people did, right? But at the same time, we have to be explicitly pro-white. Running away from that out of either cowardice because you're afraid of being called a racist or whatever, or just out of just discomfort of being pro-white personally because you've internalized some of this anti-racist bullshit. It's the pathway to death. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's going to kill us. It's going to kill us. So that's, we need to stop fucking playing around. Stryker.
Hey, Cork.
Stryker says, along the lines of your last show, The Clinton Chronicles 1994 here on Odyssey is an informative documentary. Billy Boy followed the Jewish playbook to a T, and he and Hillary's rise to power. Happy New Year. I think I might have seen that a I've mentioned before my mom used to get these Clinton documentaries on VHS when I was a kid, and that might have been one of them. So I might have seen that when I was very, very young. I might be worth checking out again. Jake's channel says, Happy New Year, Devin. Have you ever watched the Planet of the Apes TV series? There's an episode called The Good Seeds, apparently the first one they filmed, but not the first one they showed, which could be the subject of a good stream. If you're talking about the one that was back in the 60s or 70s, I might have seen a rerun at one point. I'm aware of it existing, but I haven't really paid close attention to it. So I'll add that to my notes here. Let's see. They got past all my, I got like a lot of fucking notes from tonight. So get to my regular notes. There we go. Okay. Gorilla Hand says, Devin, what do you think of the DEI hires running emergency services in LA? It's ironic that these girl bosses are going to burn down Hollywood due to their horrible decisions and man-hating. Karma is a bitch sometimes. Can I get a womp womp? Yeah, well, I just think that, you know, that's going to be the case increasingly. Sure, it's a womp womp now, but we're all going to be the victims of this at some point, right? As the country becomes increasingly less white, and as white males in particular have less and less power, as a direct result of not asserting themselves, quite frankly, we are going to be more and more on the shit end of that stick. Gorilla Hand says, all right, we just did that. Zazzy McTazbot says, a few months ago, you did a stream that involved Springfield, Ohio, eating cats and dogs. There's a clip of one of your listeners on the news. They took him out of context. If you are from one of the places that have been mentioned in the past, give us a little update over the next few streams. I'm thinking about places like Gallup, Bessemer, East Palestine, Maui, Oklahoma City, Waco, Postville, and East St. Louis, Atlanta, Southall, etc. Give us a chat and fill us in. How are things now? I think you're talking about Bill Monaghan, and he is, from what I understand, he's planning on leaving that area because it doesn't appear to be getting any better. Graham Playing Games says, you mentioned the language Esperanto. There is a movie with William Shatner called Incubus from 1966 that is made in Esperanto for some reason. Well, the reason was they were trying to make it a thing. A man goes to an island of demons or something. I noticed it because it's on a list of newly released 4K remastered Blu-rays. Yeah, it was an effort to popularize the international language that would de-Anglify the world order, if you will. It was a way of undermining white power and to promote globalism. And it went nowhere because it's kind of a dumb idea. But yeah, there is a movie starring William Shatner. The entire movie's in Esperanto. It's kind of fucking silly. Blue Cord.
Wise money management. Where's the rest?
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Stack. Another small token of appreciation for your work. Thanks for what you do. Shout out to the mods willing to stay up and keep order. You won't get this, but Red Pants should be banned and Mick is still an asshole. I don't get that, but there you go. I appreciate the support there, Blue Corn. Evergreen Dream, I'm curious about Trump's sudden interest in Greenland and how it will benefit Zog. Maybe it'll be a good place to install anti-Semite camps. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't really kept close watch on that. I think it's entirely possible there's some kind of natural resource or military, strategic advantage tied to that, one or the other. Beach Boys. Beach Boy, shekels for Mr. Stack. Well, I appreciate that. Brody says, hi, Devin. I'm a bit behind in watching these streams. Have you shared your thoughts on the U.S. possibly taking over Greenland, Canada, and Panama Canal? No, not really. I think that Greenland's a question mark. The Panama Canal, lots of people have... Because it was retarded to give it away. We built the Panama Canal. And I think it was Jimmy Carter that gave it away. Canada, we're never going to take over Canada. I mean, at least that doesn't seem realistic to me. Greenland, that's more of a question mark. But we'll see what happens with that. Clever Name says, RIP, retarded faggot. There we go. Yeah, it's been a long time. Panzer Division, Murdoch. Have you ever watched Jude Suss? If not, you need to ASAP. And if so, would you be willing to do a watch party for such an important and truly great motion picture? It's the antithesis of Goy programming. I think that if it's the one I'm thinking of, I have seen that. There is one that is actually dubbed pretty well, because subtitles for things like that kind of suck. But I don't know, maybe we could check it out. You can find it, I think, on archive.org there's a bunch of different versions. If you can find the one that's dubbed, there is one version that's dubbed where it actually is pretty decent. If it's the one I'm thinking of. Jack the Savant says, not opening the stream with We Didn't Start the Fire is near criminal, also near uniformity of the right wing grifter space. Flating Trump for shitting on Americans is incredible. Well, yeah, a lot of people have a lot of hope wrapped up in Trump. And look, I just think that just like last time, by the end of his second term, there'll be people just as black-pilled as they were at the end of his first term. People have very short memories. Sleepy.
Wise money management. Where's the rest?
Thank you.
Sleepy says, hey, Dev, big fan, first time sending in. I was wondering if you ever considered doing a stream on the Boston busing fiasco from the 1970s and 80s. Whites were bused into black schools, and they tried to fight it. Love you, bro. Keep up the great work, and I loved your book. Well, we've talked about that on a few different streams, and one of them is, I think, Test Subject Edition is kind of talking about some of the results of that experiment. But yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for the support there, Sleepy. Welcome to the pillbox. Reinhardt says, looking forward to the replay. Meta has a great deal on free personal FBI agents, for which Mark Zuckerberg has recently run an ad in his most recent PSA. It was announced that free speech will be reinstated on his platforms. Yeah, we'll see. Well, I believe it when I see it. I think Mark Zuckerberg knows that Facebook isn't cool, and that Elon made a faux pas, a very public faux pas, and he's going to try to cash in on the fallout. Bloot and Biden. Bloot and Biden says, so Trudeau, the bastard son of Fidel Castro, says he will step down after a leadership convention. He was so easy and fun to hate. I will be sorry to see him go. I'm talking about Canadian politics at the federal level, for those who are wondering. Yeah, and not everyone's convinced. I'm 100% convinced that he's Castro's son, and I have been for years. Tomato, potato nigger. Oh, I'm getting a lot of repeats tonight. Thank you for your work, brother. Well, I appreciate that, and thank you for the support. The Ministry of Truth says, I mentioned a while back that I was working on a series on the likely origins and evolution of the Jew. I would like to have you on to discuss this and the adaptation of their propaganda. For those interested, here's part one. I'll take a look at that. Let me copy the link here. Normally I would link fag you, but I'm feeling nice. Feeling nice. There we go. Reinhardt says the National Organization for the Vital Action recently held a ground action in Texas, shedding some light on Trump's broken campaign promises with respect to January 6th and mass deportations. Good to see men pushing back on the complacency from the right as the God Emperor slithers his way back in novanow.org. Well, there you go. Trump's, I don't know, he's behaving exactly as expected as far as I'm concerned. Man of low moral fiber, I've noticed chat is a little sad that you've been going too easy on the gay links lately. So I've included the gayest link to, I guess if you're asking for it, right?
Yes?
You are gay!
There you go. I guess I need to go back to my authoritarian roots. Fuck Knuckle with the big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. Fuck Knuckle says, good evening, Mr. Stack. Have you done a stream on Robert Clark Graham? I don't think so. He was the founder of the Repository for Germinal Choice, a sperm bank for geniuses. It had 19 high IQ repeat donors, including the one and only William Buckley. P.S. Hit that fire button, faggots. No, I have not. I wonder, what, is there more to it than that? I'll maybe look into that. Maybe there's more to it than that. But thank you for the big dono, Fuck Knuckle. Terrace Tarantula says, was there a global welcome memo that went out at the turn of the century to Eastern European Jews to flood America or what? Sure seems like something popped off to push them all here at this specific time in history. Well, you had the Russian Revolution kind of brewing and a lot of pogroms and stuff like that. So, you know, we got the Jews. That's where they came here. And we're never the same since. Slavery to False God says America is a young country, but its system of government is quite old. Those tend to change more frequently in the old world. However, your personal claim on the American continent that you trace to the Mayflower is quite inconsiderable to most people. It was literally yesterday, historically speaking. Why do you feel that the culture is a product of biology? Germany has absolutely no democratic tradition, yet today it is. Most of Europe now has culture and government imposed on them by the USA. We stopped chopping heads, albeit biologically, were the same as the ancestors that did just 200 years ago. Look, if you can't understand why there is a biological consistency that differentiates the behavior and the outcomes of countries all across the world, like that you can see that there's a different output, whether you want to measure that in economics or culture or civilization between European countries, regardless of the form of government. No one's saying that the democracy is the end-all be-all. It's just the civilization generally. And that can be measured well beyond just the type of government that it is. That you can't expect a sub-Saharan African, for example, that comes from a part of the world and a people that have never produced anything, including a written language without the help of whites, to be able to assimilate into the societies that we create for ourselves. I don't know why this would be difficult for anyone to understand unless you're being purposely obtuse, because apparently maybe some component of this applies to you. But, thank you all the same. Leo the Dangler.
I'm just a weekend photographer.
Man, we are just getting repeats tonight. The magic whites just take advantage of magic soil. Yeah, that's exactly. That's kind of what the last guy was saying, there's nothing special about us at all. It's just the magic dirt of America that we somehow lucked out and got. Nazi dice. I repeatedly asked one of my best friends, who is still under Trump's spell, to tell me one thing that makes Trump good for America, and after 2 weeks, he finally came up with an answer. And the only thing he could come up with is that Trump will lower the prices of his beloved Goy Slop Big Macs. Well, sadly, there's a lot of people for which that is a good enough reason for. In fact, the economic argument is what a lot of people ended up reverting to when they were unable to come up with anything. Oh, at least gas will be cheaper or whatever. In terms of radicalization, that's the opposite of what you want. Because that's when the goy slop gets cheap, that's when everyone goes back to sleep. Leo the Dangler says darky cost. No information beyond that. Man of low moral fiber says that's not the way we do business in this country. I sincerely don't understand how anyone tolerates these Jews. Well, yeah, the fact that they do is why they are the way that they are. The Screen Age.
The only thing I can figure out is that they're a dying race, and they want to reproduce more of their own kind. Oh, horrible.
Another idea I've been playing with, using social media to compile lists of people who've publicly admitted to voting for Kamala Harris. Such lists can help determine who's first in line for the conscription, taxes and penalties related to the war efforts, etc. Well, in a perfect world, right? In a perfect world. Bessemer72 says, "Hi, Devin. Watch the UK addressing the e-petition asking for another general election due to Labour Party not delivering on promises prior to last election. My favorite line was a PM saying we don't have elections just because the citizens want one. That isn't a democracy. 3 million signed it." Well, again, it doesn't really matter what you guys say. And it's not, look, to be, it's never been a democracy. That's just a way of making you feel like you're helping. It's a way of making you feel like you're participating in some way. And so that you think that you have some kind of control over your lives or the future of your nations when you don't. That's what it is. It's really, it literally is. That's what these elections are. It's to make you feel like you, it's an outlet. It's an outlet for your dissatisfaction for how things are going. Because at least it gives you some ownership. You feel like, well, you know, I did my part. I'm somehow participating. I have some ownership of what's going on when you don't. You really don't. And they've made that abundantly clear. Leo the Dangler just says Night Nation review, smooth like Nick. Not sure what that means. So there you go. We got Serbian Bull says 10 hearts, one beat, 100 hearts, one beat, 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and die and to continue the flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. Rob Matthews. Well, there you go. Quote from Rob Matthews. Hammerhead Cow says, "Hello, Devin. Love what you do. Give me a link, Sergey. Well, you have to send a link to get one of those. Senolito, I think. Senolito, what was your heart rate when you watched this for the first time? I've been raging all day long, as I cut little snippets out of this. And as you can imagine, I got really pissed off, especially when he said our founding fathers. I about lost it. But yeah. And then we got Penelope Maynard with a big dono back from the dead with a very, you know, we're going to do, it's a little late for Christmas. We're going to do a Christmas dono.
Children, today we'll be reading the best Christmas ever. Our story begins with
The Magic Negro.
Christmas tree,
I'm sure.
This is Christmas!
Little Santa's!
Where did the snowman go?
All right. Penelope Maynard says, what a clusterfuck on our side. Drunk Judas Buckley founded his rag National Review with a Jew, Willie Schlum. William F. Buckley was a despicable... now you're using words I can't even say. Let's...
Pusillanimous.
White traitor. Regardless, happy new year, Devin, for your fiery, happy racist Penelope. Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, he was basically, either why or at least related to why he never mentioned Jews, is he had the National Review, which was basically run and operated by Trotskyite Jews. And they took over the conservatives in America, he was instrumental in that. But none of these guys mentioned Jews. In fact, it's kind of funny. I tried to look up any of the people on that panel. I would just look up their name and anti-Semitism, and you'd get almost no results. And I even asked like AIs, like, can you give me any examples of them saying something that might be perceived as anti-Semitic? Nothing. And that's. Yeah, that's a major piece of the puzzle to be missing, unless you're controlled opposition. Serbian, thank you very much, Penelope, for the big support there. Serbian Bull, you should look into whitepilled.tv. It's the most stable and secure streaming platform in white nationalism. They actually give a fuck about their streamers and want to see them succeed and take 0% of your cut. They have white superior admins with white superior tech. Well, I'm happy with where we're at right now, but that might be where we have. If we have problems, it's good to know there are alt tech platforms popping up. Although the name might be a little weird if it's whitepill.tv and I'm blackpill.com. So, but there's another platform people can check that out they'd like. Scottish American Jerk.
I hear the noise. Smell the musky odor.
Nice. Hey, Devin, pagan revivalism on Telegram says that pagan revivalism is inevitable and the only way to save us. Dr. William Luther Pierce said we shouldn't divide our race along religious lines. As a recent convert to Celtic paganism or Celtic, depending on how you want to pronounce that, I lean towards the former stance. Thoughts? The former stance, huh? So you think that the only way forward is pagan revivalism. I don't think that that's a viable path forward at this time, and maybe never. I don't think that going back to paganism is realistic on a grand scale, certainly not in America, maybe more so in European countries, but it's a non-starter in America. And look, maybe who knows, maybe there'll be some big pagan religious revival in America, I don't see that coming. And I think that race, blood is thicker than water. Race is more important to me than, your religion. And so that's, again, we can't afford to make these kinds of divisions right now. And especially right now. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, have you already done a stream on the Rodney King riots? I found a documentary called Let It Fall, Los Angeles, and they actually interview the dumb fucking apes who beat Reginald Denny. Rodney King was given millions by the city to do PCP for the rest of his life. Denny was given nothing. We've covered it. I haven't seen that documentary, so maybe I'll add that, and maybe we can take a look at that. But I have covered it before. My line eye says I have a two-step geopolitical policy. Nuke Mexico, nuke Israel equals world peace. Well, I don't know that would equal world peace, but hey, at least you're being assertive, I guess, right? Bill Monaghan, speak of the devil.
Hello, I'm Amy.
Bill Monaghan says things aren't much different here other than a lot of people have convinced themselves that Trump is going to start deporting Haitians in 11 days. Some are getting increasingly abusive and delusional when you express skepticism. Others are realizing that it's not going to happen. You know what? Look, I guess the silver lining is that, you know, you only have to wait 11 days for them to be disappointed. Yeah, I mean, look, who knows? There might be some adjustments made to that program in terms of at least stopping more of them coming in. I don't even know if that'll happen, but I think that that's at least possible. They're not going to kick the ones that are here out, though. But, you know, yeah, that's... Most people do not live in reality, unfortunately. Let's see here. Man of Low Moral Fiber says... Oklahoma City is mega gay today. The state recently gave the red Negroes special rights after a red Negro raped whites and said that it was okay because it was on the plains, Mexican land, and the Supreme Court agreed. Now only the FBI can arrest them. And obviously, I don't know all the details of what we're talking about, but I think what we're getting at is Oklahoma basically gave a lot of the state away to the Indians, and which has made jurisdictions all stupid. I don't know the case you're talking about, but I could see how that could be a problem. And then you go on to say, what is the tune that is playing in the Sky You're Falling Down bumper? I'm not sure which one you're talking about. Oh, the Skier Falling Down. Skier. It's late. Oh, that's a System of the Down song. I forget the name of it, but it's a System of a Down song. My lying eye says Hitler stash 25. I'm bringing it back, bro. That would be interesting if people actually started wearing those out in public. I wonder how. I wonder if you could bring them. Eventually, you'll be able to bring it back. But you got to think of it this way too. The Hitler stash was even weird in Hitler's time. That's kind of why he did it. It was a very unique mustache, and he wanted to look unique. He wanted to set himself apart from the others because, you know, it was in a time when there was no, you know, no real access to marketing. You had to, like, look unique so that you stuck in people's minds when they saw, oh, it's that guy with the mustache. It's not like it was a super popular mustache then, though. And so I don't know if it'll ever really come back because I don't know that it ever really was popular in the first place. But, hey, yeah, more power to you, I guess, right? Private Weeb says, hi, Devin. I was wondering if you've seen the Dear Elon video by Sam Hyde. I'm very pleased with the largely positive online response to the video. He directly mentions the replacement of whites and the realities of genetics. It's very well worded and very funny at times. He's truly our guy. My only issue is, and I think this was intentional, is it's obviously... It skews normie, and it also kind of, it's almost like telling Elon, oh, don't worry, well, you know, just we'll forgive you this time. You know, it'll be fine. And it's like, I'm tired of fucking forgiving these fucking people when they show you who they really are. And I feel like Elon, if he took any of that advice, that's what he did, is he'd start talking about rape gangs and Tommy Robinson. And sure enough, so many people are like, oh, all is forgiven. All is forgiven. He's based Elon again because he's talking about dissident right talking points from 10 years ago. Now that nothing can be done about it, right? So, but anyway, let's take a look at Rumble. All right, Rumble. And as always, I got to rewind all of Rumble. Partially, it's my fault. I didn't open up the plugin this time when I should have. All right. Looks like we got a short list on Rumble today. So that's Fancy Pants and MP5s says nuts. I'm not sure what you're referring to, but indeed. Unreconstructed Rebel with the big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is.
When you're trying to save money, a good rule to follow is to...
Take it from me, Jim Neighbors. It'll pay dividends.
Unreconstructed Rebel says, obligatory Southern pride worldwide. Exactly. Exactly. Scrolling down. Thank you for the support there, as always. You're always the big dick dono on Rumble there. Scrolling down. Oh, we got Negro Spritzer. says, just so you're aware, Rumble does not process hyper chats with certain slurs. So there you go. And then he lists all the slurs. Well, there you go. I'm not surprised. Rumble is not exactly a free speech platform. Neither is really, I don't think, Odyssey. I think that Odyssey wouldn't be much of a... I mean, look, I think we're a big portion of Odyssey's platform. Just being honest here. I think without the insomnia stream, what is Odyssey really? And so... that might change. Someday they might get someone bigger and, we don't need this racist anymore. And as for Rumble, I don't know. I think we're constantly skating on thin ice when it comes to Rumble. But we shall see. We shall see. We got to remain nimble. I think that we've been navigating this for years, you know, get kicked off this platform, go to that platform. And, you know, it's just part comes with the territory. It'll probably always be like that. But good to know. Good to know that it is official. And then we got a couple more on Odyssey real quick. We got Pride Assassin says, Happy New Year. Appreciate that. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, Michael Jordan, while a black fella, is on our side regarding the Hitler stash. Is he, though? Is he? Speaking of Michael Jordan. Wait, do I have that here? Let me see. You reminded me of something that I may or may not have easily accessible. Well, I guess I don't have it easily accessible. I already don't have it up here. Let's see. Is it? I thought it would be right here. We have an oldie but goodie. Oh, here we go. Let's see if that downloads fast enough to play it. Come on, computer. Come on, internet. Still downloading. This is disappointingly slow. It ruined the whole flow. I tried to go on a limb. I was going to play a video here, and now it might not be worth it if it's not actually going to download. Let me see if I have it somewhere else while it's trying to... Oh, maybe I do have it. Yeah, okay. I already have it downloaded here. Let's do it. This is always going to be one of my favorite Michael Jordan videos.
When you put on your McDonald's uniform, your customers want more than just quick service with a smile. They expect to be treated as a guest in your home. And if you hadn't had the greatest of days, it's up to you to put on a show and do whatever it takes to satisfy your customer.
Okay, we need to think of our customers at McDonald's like they're our own personal guests and treat them that way too.
But you know, it's a shame.
What?
You don't even get to see the real stars of this scene.
What are you talking about?
The grill team.
Grill team.
Well, they're the ones who got that grill order out there so fast.
What does the grill team have to do with service?
Oh, the grill team has everything to do with customer service. You see, if they don't respond quickly in all situations, especially grill orders, then the counter people could never deliver the customer satisfaction we're shooting for. Everyone in the store has to do their part. It's the teamwork that gets the job done.
Okay, everybody, this is the final scene, and let's make it good. This is the perfect service scene. Everybody know their business?
Yep.
Okay, places, everyone. Roll tape. And action.
If we rated what you just saw as A service, we're shooting for A plus service. The smiles, the friendly treat them as guest gestures. Our goal is to make our guests think, hey, these McDonald's people really care about me. And you know what? We really do. When you notice a guest not getting that great McDonald's service, help them quickly.
Get the fuck out of my drive-thru!
Now let's take another look at that last scene. Even though it may have been good service, there are always ways to improve on customer satisfaction. Look for ways in which you would improve our service. It's okay to do whatever it takes.
So that's my favorite Michael Jordan video. And then real quick at the end, we got Man of Low Moral Fiber says, Michael Jordan actually did wear a Hitler mustache for a while in 2018. The Jews flipped out about it. I actually didn't know. Let's see, we'll pop up a picture and we'll end with that. Michael Jordan Hitler stash. It's kind of Hitler stashy, I guess. But it's, you know, I think this is just hysterical Jew. As usual, it's hysterical Jew more than it's based Michael Jordan here. There it is. All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming out, and we'll be back here on Saturday. Same bat time, same bat channel. In the meantime, for Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Stagg.
Something Mickey Dorn.
Oh, him.
Keeps going on about me not having a proper school uniform.
It's not your fault, though. Your dad's sick, isn't he? Wish I could wear jeans instead of this stupid thing.
It's different when you have to do it.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And he keeps calling me names.
What sort of names? Fine, it sometimes helps to tell someone.
Just the usual gollywog, chocolate. And he keeps doing chimpanzee noises.
Oh, I can't stand him. He's horrible. Anyway, it's not your fault you're a nignog, is it?
Nigga, 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 nigga. I'm 100% nigga.